flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, we have four members present. Mr. Funky Baloo is absent at the moment. Would there be a report from closed session?
I'm sorry. We met in closed session with the items listed at the last meeting, and no agreements or decisions were made that are reportable.
Thank you. Any agenda review?
No changes or additions or deletions from staff.
Okay. Any from members?
No.
Okay, we'll proceed. Acknowledgements. Today is, well, this month is the Red Cross Month. Is the Red Cross representative here? No, I believe they had another engagement, but as it is this month, I think I should just read very briefly the citation, which we'll hand to them later. It's the 121st anniversary of the first American Red Cross, and we're honoring the San Luis Obispo County chapter. They've been, for more than 89 years, they've led the effort to prevent and prepare and respond to disasters. 05 has had unprecedented challenges, along with the tsunami, which was right at the beginning of the year, the hurricanes of 05, which is Katrina, Rita, and Wilma, to name but a few. And this has stretched the resources of the Red Cross severely. Through this, our Red Cross needs you, the citizens, and we would ask that you get involved in Red Cross. In 05, the San Luis Obispo County chapter has responded to 45 local emergencies, assisted 144 military families, and trained over 13,000 people in life-saving skills, such as CPR and first aid. And Red Cross volunteers were there to bring aid, information, and just as important, comfort to those in need. To the Red Cross, there is no small disaster, only neighbors in need. The San Luis Obispo chapter, their volunteers and donors provide valuable tools and education to individuals, families, workplace, schools, making us stronger and more resilient. As we celebrate the contributions of the American Red Cross here and across the nation, we look forward to doing our part. They remain vital, ready to help us prevent, prepare, and respond to unknown challenges. Now, therefore, I, Peter Chaldicott, on virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Directors, do hereby proclaim March 06 as American Red Cross Month. I urge all Americans, particularly those in the county and those particularly watching us on TV, to continue to give your time, blood, and money to make the difference in the humanitarian fabric of this community. Because when we help the Red Cross, we help each other. Thank you. Do we have the sheriff here this week?
I don't have a sheriff, but I will represent
him. Please, sir, introduce yourself and tell us who you are. Thank you.
Issues, four vandalisms and five drug arrests. In addition, we assisted state parole. They went up to the old Cambria Air Force Base and arrested, made three arrests up there. One thing, I guess, the comment I can make, again, I'll repeat it again, especially along the coast, is if you have a car, lock your vehicle when you leave it. I think along in some areas of the county, they kind of would say you're nuts for not locking your vehicle. But in the Cambria, Cayucas, Los Osos, people find it actually amazed when someone actually enters their car and have left it unlocked and take items out of it. So it is a wonderful place to live, it's a good feeling to have here, but when you leave your vehicle, particularly at night, it's advisable to lock your vehicle. Other thing I would say is something I've noticed over the years, something I see a lot more of actually, is identity-type thefts or fraud-type thefts. The Sheriff's Department does have a crime prevention unit that does give presentations on that. So if you know someone that is willing to host something like that, I think it would be a benefit to the community. Do you have any questions?
Let me ask a question on the identity theft. How long would a presentation such as that take? As a minimum?
Generally speaking, the person that puts this on is Randy Johnson. He could probably put it on in an hour.
I was just thinking in terms of whether it's something, if we did it as part of a meeting one day, it would then get out on television and people would see it at home as well.
I think he could make it whatever it needs to be, mm-hmm. but I think he, generally speaking, the presentation to do it properly, to deal with all the questions and things, just generally it's about an hour.
Okay, and you said Randy Johnson?
Yes.
At your office or the central office?
The sheriff's office,
Thank
yes.
Yes.
Is that an unusually large number of incidents, crime incidences in
no.
Cambria?
No.
Maybe we just haven't had
no.
that kind
I,
of a
Actually, I feel like, one, burglaries in the cell, that seems to be the bigger one, if there, you want to call it that here, is that not particularly high. The officer had been particularly effective up here in addressing those. Nationwide, they're just one of those things because there's no victim identification. They don't get solved at a very high rate normally, but we've had a very effective job of solving those particular crimes, particularly along the coast here. So they've done an excellent job on that. The other ones I can go through, I mean, you talk traffic violations. I think there's a DUI. There was a traffic stop with a unlicensed driver. Those all generate some sort of report. Domestic violence, I don't know what you do about that. Those cases was one where there was actual assault. The other two, I believe, were violation of court orders. Someone showed up at someone's house or they continued to make phone calls in violation of the domestic violence restraining order. Vandalisms, I don't recall them all. I just remember one was a pine cone through a window. Two of them were up there at the high school in the last couple of weeks, and I know the school resource officer is taking a look into those. So, and then the drug arrest. Actually, I'd say two of them. One, we had a death in the South County. That person was reported to have overdosed on heroin. He was from the Cambria area. That's a in many ways is disturbing. You see heroin coming back into the system. The other one was a cocaine overdose.
Some part of the fence. So it seems like this is sort of a thing that some group is doing. This is the second or third time it's happened here, and I know it's happened other places. So I don't know if any kind of a presence could be.
Well, I think it's very helpful, like you said, to make the report. Even if sometimes you think, oh, no, it won't do any good. It's really quite surprising. Sometimes it does some good. One, it brings the awareness at the deputy's level. Mm-hmm. And also, there's sometimes they actually can't solve those. They hear something on the streets and they haven't even have a report on it. It's really hard to follow up on. So I encourage the community, if you have a problem you think is a violation of any sort, please report it.
Okay.
We're going to try to keep it as keep the community as pleasant as it is.
Well, it's something to use for all the community, and we'd like to keep it safe and make it a place that people like to come to. Anyway,
right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Yes, thank you very much, Commander.
Elon, did you have anything? No? Okay, thank you.
It's nice to see you.
Good to see you. I'm glad you made this meeting, though.
Thank you. Let us move on to the general manager.
Okay. Thank you. Just want to remind everyone that Mission Country's annual spring cleanup is scheduled for April 24th through 28th. I know maybe I sound like a broken record every meeting, but it is a great opportunity to assist with keeping our community free of excess trash or recycling or green waste that you might have around your home or your lots. During this time, this is when you can put out extra recycling or green waste or garbage, and even some of the larger items you might have around home, hot water heaters, mattresses, appliances, TVs. They just require a call to Mission Country Disposal, and there's a nominal fee for pickup, but it's extremely simple to do by calling their number. Back on the back table, there are news releases with regard to the upcoming signing ceremony for a project cooperative agreement for our desal plant. We're inviting the public to join Congresswoman Lois Capps, Army Corps of Engineer officials, and other elected public officials and the community, as well as CCSD Board of Directors and staff at the ceremony. And it will be held Monday, March 27th, this coming Monday, at 1 o'clock p.m. here at Vets Hall. And there will be a light reception following the ceremony. It will be very brief. And it will be an opportunity for those who are interested to communicate with their elected officials who are here. And there are some news releases back on the back table for those who might be interested. Under Human Resources, we have upcoming negotiations. They begin next week with our two employee organizations, the Service Employees International Union Local 620, that's SEIU, and the Cambria Professional Firefighters Association. Those two agreements, or their contracts, expire on June 30th of this year. Under Parks and Recreation, the PROS Commission met on Tuesday, March 7th. They elected their officers. Michael Thompson is the chairperson, and Gail Robinette is the vice chairperson. They also selected their committees and established the chairs, those being Parks Committee, chaired by Jack Braglio, Recreation Committee, chaired by Bob Kelly and co-chaired by Steve Figler, the Open Space Committee, and the Forest Committee representative will be chaired by Ben Bolden, and the Trails Committee will be chaired by Gail Robinette. They discussed the potential for the community center of Cambria and North Coast Swap being X4. And the last item I bring back was the proposed vegetation management program or a certification program that Rick Hawley of Green Space had brought up. We've looked into the fact that it would be extremely difficult to enforce such a program, but there have been some ideas that have been brought up since I've done my report when trying to consider drafting a resolution or an ordinance with regard to how we could get compliance among private property owners if they did not either get themselves certified to clear their lots and or maybe they didn't hire a certified lot clearer who had gone through the training program. It just turns into a burden, an added burden for staff and who might accomplish that task. Did get some comments and some feedback, though, that what we could do, and you'll see even today in the agenda, that there is maybe some room to include it in the fire hazard fuel reduction program, that we could suggest some language might be that the property owners, whenever there's any lot clearing done, that it be done by a locally certified operator or contractor, and then mention that the certification can be obtained from Green Space and go through it that way, at least in order to get started with the value of the whole training program is to preserve the ecosystem and the environment, and that definitely is important to this board and this staff, but maybe that's a good first step. So I offer that up just to make sure you know that I heard that message loud and clear. I feel like we should move forward with something, but maybe this is the way that we bring it back to you. And that's all.
Any questions for Tammy? I would emphasize what you just said, that we try and include that in our lot reduction because we do have contact with people that are having their lots cleared, and if we point them in a direction that they should go, I think it would help. And that is a start. Being policeman is very difficult.
You're welcome. So, yeah. Okay. And thank you for your input.
Thank you. Mr. Gresham, is it?
I'm going to be the district engineer today.
Okay.
I would like to tell you that he is very, very busy putting together our Prop 50 grant application. So his intent was to be here, but rather than delay, I'll go ahead and go down his report. He starts out with the Water Master Plan, Environmental Impact Review, and the Build-Out Reduction Planning. Talks about how we've been meeting, and your committee you're going to hear from today has been working every Wednesday on the financial options and development of alternatives with regard to financing, along with Roger Dale of the Nettleson Dale Company. And then that summary, like I said, will be made today by your committee. He mentions that in addition to the build-out reduction program, staff has been coordinating with RBF Consulting on their continued development of the Water Master Plan program and the Environmental Impact Report. Moving along to Pine Knolls tank replacement, the preparations have continued to the site prior to the arrival and mobilization of the general contractor, that being CBI Constructors, Inc. On March 17th, the buried conduits were installed for the future relocation and burial of the overhead charter cable, as well as the overhead 12,000-volt PG&E wires. Cummings Construction completed the underground conduits under a direct contract with the district. And this mostly trenchless construction method allowed saving existing trees that are along the southern boundary of the site and also minimized disturbances along the western boundary. The next act is lifting and relocating an existing tank to make room for construction of the first new tank. The first new tank will take approximately 4 months to complete, or approximately the late August to September timeframe. After the first new tank is placed in operation, the older tanks will be removed from the site and the second new tank will be constructed. Okay, in his final paragraph for the greenhouse tank, he talks about a detailed change order that will result with regard to when we got the original bid a couple of years ago and had to go through the whole permitting process. He has requested the services of O'Connor Construction Management to provide backup cost estimating services. Because of the time frame and the change in materials, we're going to have to see what the differences are going to be in the original bid and the cost of those materials today. He believes that these services will not exceed $3,120. And since they're a sub-consultant to Boyle Engineering, he believes they'll fall within the currently budgeted amount for Boyle Engineering. That's the reason you see it in his staff report rather than an agenda item. And he'll keep us up to date on those tasks and as it gets more formalized.
Tammy, I was noticing that the completion for the first tank is late August, September, which is our critical fire season. And I guess really that's a real critical situation for the district. So
he is working within that time frame.
I mean, if you need to call the board for a special meeting to do something, do it. Because, I mean, the last thing these guys want to be doing is stuck in September and only half the tanks on.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's a good point. For the desalination project, efforts have focused on responding to permitting information requests for the pending collection of geological and hydrogeological data, as well as obtaining federal and state project funding. The Padre Associates will be completing a wetlands demarcation survey this week in order to respond to questions posed by San Luis Obispo County on the coastal development permit that is required to conduct the scientific data collection efforts. In addition, staff is completing the Prop 50 grant application to the State Department of Water Resources, which is due tomorrow, March 24th. We've also scheduled the formal signing ceremony, which I've already talked about. And let's see, finally, he has the Stewart Street water tanks, that a scope of work for design of the future of the pending Stewart Street tank project and replacement of the Zone 2 booster pump station is being finalized and will be issued as part of a request for proposals. He says he'd mentioned having an agreement to the board for approval by the April board meeting. However, due to other project activities this month, he thinks that will be delayed until the May board meeting. And that's all for District Engineer Bob Gresson's report.
Any comments from the... Yes, sir.
Tammy, back to the EIR for the desal plant. And the. Do we have any sense of when we're actually going to get that?
Brian, you don't know anything about timing. I know Bob's been really busy with his Prop 50 grant application, but I haven't asked him lately about the timing and his review of the EIR. Would you?
No, I don't.
That's a good question. Director Coven, I'll have to ask Bob.
Well, you know, whenever we were working with the consultants for the build-out, we'd get a report periodically on the EIR.
It's a good point.
It seemed like it was always almost done.
Well, a couple of your constituents have mentioned to me about having a layman's presentation of the desal project and exactly where it is and how much it is without having some really busy charts and PowerPoint presentations. So I committed to these constituents as well as to a couple of you who have mentioned something similar that we'd try to get that on for next month.
Yeah, if it was, I missed it or forgot it. But I would just like to call attention to the fact that we went through such a torturous process getting permits to do this project, and much of it hinged around the fact that they're concerned with devastating the forest and all the rest of it, which if this was not chosen, spelled out, it certainly indicate that we're not just like Attila the Hun going out there and slash and burn. I mean, that is not the cheapest way to put the 12,000-volt lines. That's certainly not the cheapest option.
We'll make sure we respond to that next month.
Send a note to the Coastal Commission, too.
We could mention that when you and I were in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago, we did talk to a number of our elected representatives about Prop 50 and to staff, and I think our project has high marks for both the sensitivity and no growth potential and things like that, but there was a lot of competition, so we just have to hope on that.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I counted the letters before I came to the board meeting, and there were 75 support letters for the Proposition 50 grant application. And There were many of us who were diligent in calling and emailing and visiting in Sacramento and around San Luis Obispo County to get these support letters. But I want to thank each and every person, because even though we offered up a form letter and I forwarded it to many, many constituents and folks who were on the wait list and these legislators and their assistants, there was always, it seemed like, as I read through them today, many people who personalized them. And they had their own little say-so. So this is not one of those canned, I've got 75 letters saying the same thing, grant applications. Sure, some of them are very similar. But I was really impressed, and I want to thank all of the constituents and folks who did participate in that process. It's a very good group, and I would encourage you, when you get a copy of the application, to thumb through those people. There's many, many Cambrians and groups here within Cambria that supported that grant application. I failed to acknowledge North Coast Swap's report this month, and I see Joellen is here, so I certainly don't want to ignore her. I usually put North Coast Swap quarterly report right after the general manager report on the agenda, and I forgot to do that this month, so she kindly reminded me. So if you would allow her to give her North Coast Swap quarterly report.
Yes, proceed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is this a
report? I didn't recognize her with her haircut.
Is this a report on the Fiscalini Ranch?
No, this is the North Coast Swap Organization and their activities.
Because I see Joellen, I just think of Fiscalini Ranch.
Of course you do.
Thank you, Joellen. Please proceed.
Hi. Kathy's passing out the written report to you because I had a request to have it written at one time. And I don't know how this thing works exactly here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
I'm Joellen Butler, Executive Director for North Coast Swap, and I just kind of want to bring you up to date on what we've been doing. We're going to start our conservation easement monitoring this coming Monday, copy to the CCSD. The cell tower, I know, Peter, this is a subject that you're really interested in. And I talked with Tricia Knight. She's a consultant for the new Singular. And she said that the visual analysis is finally complete. The report is still not done. They had to do some new, what are they called? Revised photo simulations for the report. And then it goes to Lauren LaJoy, who's a consultant for the county, at the beginning of April, and then should go to the county after that. So it looks like we may be going forward with the cell tower at this point. Erosion control on the ranch. Our projects committee met in early March and has identified water runoff and erosion control as being major concern on the ranch. And with Ben Bohr, we identified several erosion problems, the main one being the Seacliff Gully. Then another one was the trail, the Mid-Forest Trail, was running water all last year through the wet season, and it contributes to that Seacliff Gully. And Ben Bohr and some other volunteers started a new alignment for that trail, and the Ranch Hand volunteers and North Coast Swap came in and rebuilt that trail. So there is a trail on higher ground, and hopefully that will allow a lot of the plants in that really wet area to regrow and slow the water flow through there going to the gully. On another part of that, North Coast Swap has been talking with the Resources Conservation District in Templeton, and they have been looking at the erosion problems on the ranch and giving us suggestions and looking at possible funding sources for doing something about those. And we're hoping to get a meeting together of all of the interested parties, everybody who's done projects on the Santa Rosa Creek watershed. We're hoping to look at the ranch as a larger picture, part of the whole watershed landscape. And we'll be hopefully meeting together with people who have done projects on the creek or near the ranch, all the property owners, people who expect to do projects, because that watershed goes out into the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary, and the ranch is included as part of that, and it will just improve water quality all around and hopefully take care of some of the erosion problems.
Do you think you could hit the high points as this is fairly lengthy?
Sure. I just wanted to give you an update on the Thanksgiving tree planting, and we have a really good survival rate this year. Every year gets better, and this is our best year yet, and we will continue monitoring those. On the ranch work days, we've been working on invasive removal and just cleared out the area at the north end of the new bluff trail for replanting. And I just want to say that I've been working a lot with both Ben Bohr and Connie Davidson on the Bluff Trail and Marine Terrace Trail projects. And, you know, it's great to have North Coast Swap included in those projects from the beginning, and they've been great to work with.
I just noticed the phone number, 2856. Is that North Coast Swap?
That's our office,
okay.
Yeah.
So you could emphasize that if anyone wants to get involved.
Yeah, for volunteering, for finding out information about any of these things, you can call the North Coast Swap office, 927-2856. And I'm not there all the time, but leave a message and I will call you back.
I think there's so many people that are getting so much enjoyment out of the ranch, they may want to give a little bit back and be involved in a bunch of enthusiastic volunteers.
Yeah, we can always use participation in any form.
Great.
Thank you.
Any more questions for... Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Utility manager, sir.
All right. I guess the PowerPoint going over there. I just had an answer for Don Villeneuve on his trenches piping up there, and the major reason they did that was to protect the trees for the Gracies, and also there's some oak trees for the Mrs. Peterson over there. If they were to put that trenching in conventionally, they would have had to take a backhoe up there and dig alongside the oaks, and that would have cut about 180 degrees of the radial roots on all those trees, right next to the trees, and probably would have killed most of them and made them prone to blow over in a storm. So that was the main reason to do that. So we just bored underneath the trees and missed, you know, 99% of all the roots and saved them. And we're using those for screening the tanks as best as possible. So that's the main reason for doing that.
I just wondered, as you're mentioning this, is this something we should recommend to homeowners? Because we often, you know, that's typically what happens when a new home goes in.
It's a neat thing to do. I mean, you ought to think of that. Also, if you need to go under concrete like your driveway and things like that, you don't have to go cut the thing up and mess it up. So it's a good way to go. It's new technology, and it's a clean, nice, easy way to do it. Most of the time, anyway. You can hit things. There's things you can go wrong, but it's a good way to go. I'll just go with the manager's report to start. This is taken today. This is San Simeon's Lagoon. It's still going to the ocean. This is March, and it's a nice sunny day, and it's beautiful, and the surf's going off, and people are having a good time, and it just doesn't seem like a March. But and we've got 3/4 of the rainfall we normally have, and it looks like we've got good water so far, but I'm not going to say for sure until the April meeting, but things are looking good, so that's pretty good. Next slide. And this is Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa, there's a lot of water going to the ocean. Good waves there as well. And that looks good, too. And both water tables are full. Next slide. And you can see from the chart there, the white diamonds there, all the way to the right, that's our level. Next slide. And same thing, the black line with the white diamonds. We're right there, average full level for March. Next slide. That's Santa Rosa. How much water is coming down? It looks like we're probably going to be pretty good. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the seismic activity we have and the way the water is being delivered. So, but I'll let you know in April. So with that said, I think that's the last slide. No, there's one more. This is a little history over 33 years of collecting rain at the wastewater treatment plant. And the last, if you look at the blue on the right, That's where we are right now on rainfall. We're below 15 inches, and the average for this 33-year period is 21.13 inches, which is the fuchsia line. And if you look at that rainfall over that history, if anybody can figure a pattern out of that, good luck. So that's why I don't try to guess. So that's basically why that's there. And we put that on the website at the wastewater plant, so, and that's cambria.wqcb.org. Just a couple things. The screw press, we've got items coming. The main press will be here in April, and then we've got other major parts coming in May. Staff is meeting next week to do some strategic planning on working in the yard and putting some conduits in and that type of stuff to get ready for that. On storm damage, we're working with FEMA, and basically all our staff has turned in their bills and stuff and estimates on repair costs. SDRMA has basically said they'll pay for most of the stuff, most of the damage, and then FEMA will pick up the rest. And Bob Putney's been taking care of most of that. Biosolids, last report I told you they've been halted going to Kern County. That's still the case. In the interim, our staff has taken the North plant, the old North Cantex plant, and converted it to store solids on site, and we'll be able to hold solids there for 2 to 3 months and possibly even four. Don't like to do that, but we can. We've heard that some people are hauling solids to Arizona. That's where they're having to go, and it basically comes down to the fact that every other county doesn't want to put it in their own backyard, so the counties are just tightening up and closing it down. So nobody has any place to put it anymore. So that's always been my philosophy, that you should put it in your own backyard, take care of your own mess. And that's one of the reasons why the biosolid screw press that we're using can go to Class A, and hopefully we can take care of our own mess. And I went over the rainfall. I had one other item on here, one of them that keeps making me feel like Bob Hamilton all the time. There are certain jobs that, you know, this job that you're supposed to do, and then there's all the other jobs that come in to foil that and derail you. But one of them was the parking lot down on West Street and Center. And for back in 97, we started collecting money for a parking lot and for its paving, courtesy of the county. And I don't know where that went, but anyway, we met with Shirley Bianchi and her staff.
MTBE first reared its ugly head, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And so that whole thing's part of the settlement. So.
I appreciate that, Brian. Yeah. You mentioned there may be a delay in your biosolids operation. Is that going to be taken care of, you know, because of the guys being diverted?
Yes. Yes, that's, well, there's delays all over the place. I mean, there's a lot of jobs we're trying to do, and we've had some SDRMA tasks that we've had to take care of. There's the biosolids work inside the plant that we've had to take care of, safety items, storm damage, a lot of different issues that take you off the beaten path of your regular job. So we'll deal with it.
I think we should blow the trumpet for you, the very fact that both on the north and south of us, the sewer plants are running into difficulties.
Oh, don't do that. Don't jinx us.
And
but thanks for the thought.
Well, I you know, they're all running out, I guess, running out of capacity, or just haven't got a design that's suitable. But I trust our upgrade that we did in, 94 is putting us fairly safe.
Yeah, we're okay. For now. Well, we're not, in a moratorium. We're not building, so.
Yeah. It's nice to read in the paper and know it's not us.
So that is nice.
And we appreciate that, because that takes a lot of work for your guys. Thank you.
It's always nice to look at somebody that's worse off than you and feel better.
That's right. Any questions? Fire Chief.
We have that presentation by the Jim Adams, How to Read Your Meter. You guys asked for it a few months ago, so he's here to make his grand presentation. And after that, the fire chief's report is going to be given by our assistant fire chief, Mark Miller, since Chief Putney is on vacation.
All right, these gentlemen are both here testing for prime time, right?
That's it.
All right, thank you, Jim.
Board, Mr. President, I was, can you hear me all right? Asked here to go over how to read a water meter, but I just wanted to touch base first on the project of replacing all the meters in the community has been completed, as you know. We get a lot of public questions on how it works and everything, so I thought I'd touch base on that first. So, like I said, the automated meter reading system's installed. How these work, there is a regular dial, like it is on your meter, and it's wired to a transmitter. Every revolution of the dial, the transmitter sends a signal through a solid-state switch. So it's a positive pulse to the transmitter. So there's no electronic signals between the meter dial and the transmitter to get miscalculated or whatever. It's a positive signal. The transmitter collects this data from the meter, and then when we go around and read it, we have a receiver that's attached to a laptop computer in the trucks, and as we drive by, the transmitter relates it to the receiver, and the computer downloads it. Each transmitter has an ID number. This ID number is also in the billing software. That way, you're wondering, well, the receiver is picking up hundreds of meters as we drive down a street. How do they know which one's which? These meter ID numbers correlate with the billing, and they are totally separate from each usage through the meter. What it's looking for is 1 hour of downtime where there's no water going through the meter for a period of an hour, middle of the night or whatever. If it doesn't see that, then it flags us to say there's a potential leak. And in billing, the office staff in billing addresses it and compares it to their usage. If it's unusually high, then they'll send the field staff out to investigate, see if there's a potential problem or a leak. So it's a great feature. Another feature that we use quite regularly is it's called a tamper feature. There's a wire between the dial and the transmitter in the meter box. And if these get cut, they get broken, somebody digging it out, it's mainly gophers. We're already having the issue with them. Gophers chew the wires in half. Go figure. But they do. We're coming around to figuring out ways around this, but it also tells us when those wires are broke and we go back and fix it, and then we have to manually read the meter to get it in for billing. Excuse me. In that sense of the leak detection portion of the features, we're looking and planning to monitor this monthly. If staff time and everything's conducive in admin and in the field, we want to go around monthly and read all the meters in town to see what the potential leak list looks like and to be able to aid the customers in tracking their leaks sooner. This by no means means that billing is going to go to monthly. That's not our intent right now, as far as I know. I don't think there's enough time to do that. So we still look at bi-monthly billing, but that interim month in between, we're going to read just to track high usage and leaks. Another feature that I brought up before to you, and technology has proven, it's been a year and a half or so, is a water meter monitor. It's the size of a garage door opener, and you have three buttons on it. And this is programmed. We don't have the equipment to program them yet, and that's something I need to look into with the costs and everything to have this device on hand to be able to program these units so we can offer them to the public in whichever way you see fit. But it's a really interesting device. This communicates directly. It's programmed with your transmitter's ID number, so it's not looking at your neighbors seeing what Mrs. Johnson's using or anything. It's looking at yours. This is one that they gave to me to test. So this reads my meter from my refrigerator. And it's got a 7-digit digital display, and that's the meter number down to the 10th. If you hit the A button, you can reset them to zero, and you can see how much water you use doing a load of laundry, water in the yard, or so on. The B button I use for billing. We read the meters. I know that day, okay, I'll reset it to zero, and I can keep track of my usage during that billing cycle. These devices right now are $73 or $75, right around that range. I'd have to verify it. It's been a while. But we need to look into that, and I think it's a really good tool for the future for this community. Okay, onward to reading your meter, which I don't remember how, because now we don't have to look at the white field, the numbers in the white field, and calculate by subtracting the previous number to the existing one on your meter, and that'll tell you how many units you're using in this billing cycle. Or compare it to the bill that you just received to see if it was accurate. Other feature is the sweep pen, number two, the red sweep pen. This measures down to the hundredth of a cubic foot. If you notice the numbers around the dial clockwise, 0.1, 0.2, that's a tenth of a cubic foot. One full revolution is one cubic foot. It's 7.48 gallons. It takes 100 of those to make one unit. So every revolution of the sweep pan, number two, will turn a number on the numbers on the black fields next to the white ones. Those are cubic feet. Once you have 100 of those, the white field will move into your billing units. That's the gist of that. If you wanted to convert your units or your usage into gallons to see exactly how much you're using, just multiply your units, the white field, white background, by 748 gallons. That's how many are in one unit. Or, you know, the other decimal points, you can divide it by 7.48 gallons or multiply it by that, and that'll... Peter, you're the mathematician. You elaborate on that. Three is the leak detector, the blue wheel. We don't have red triangles anymore. We all have the blue pinwheels. And this rotates with the minor use of water in your house. Whenever water is flowing through your meter, that's going to be moving, whether it's very low or it'll be spinning if you're taking a shower or doing laundry or anything. So if you have any inkling that you have a leak or anything, that's what you want to look at. It's the most sensitive part of the meter dial. If you do think that you have a leak or are not sure because of your high usage, turn off all your fixtures in your house, no leaking faucets or anything, any appliances that use water, that you think are going to use water, ice maker or anything of that sense, try to turn those off. And if that little blue pinwheel is still turning, then you definitely have a leak somewhere on your property. So, and if there's any question to, if this doesn't help aid in reading the meter or anything, water staff would be more than glad to come out and explain it in the field. Any questions?
Any questions for Jim? Have we found that some of the meters that were replaced were reading low, you know, the old ones?
In some instances, yes. We haven't been able, Patrick and I have been talking about it, and we really haven't calculated it up. We need to set up, get more of a time frame, a few billing periods before we can really see the water loss issue. Some meters, yes. Some people are complaining about a little higher bill than usual, and they had older meters. There's going to be a percentage of loss there that they're experiencing, and now they're not. So, but it shouldn't be astronomical. If you have any questions of real high bills, don't take that for granted. Just call the district office, and we'll come out and make sure. We had some issues in changing out the old meters with the new ones. Human error, taking the old reads off.
That's district staff. You know, we used to have a contract with meter readers. Yeah. We do not have that anymore. That contract's been terminated. Yeah. And so they're doing that with their regular duties. It's been an excellent transition process, and we appreciate, again, the customers, each and every one of us who've kind of gone through this with us. It is unheard of to do an entire city of replacing meters, but the transition has helped all of us on staff, not just the field staff, but your administrative staff and managers, learn a whole lot more about the billing system and the capabilities of this new automated reading system that are really going to be beneficial to us.
Yeah, I think so.
Out of the 3,900 and change meters that we replaced last billing period. We've been getting the bugs out. There was only 19 that we couldn't read for obvious reasons afterwards, but that's pretty impressive, I thought.
So. Just have to keep the critters out of the hole, right?
Yes, that's the main issue.
Perhaps people are not feeding the critters. Is there any more questions for Jim? Hey, thanks, Jim. That was a very good explanation. Thanks very much. Appreciate that. Deputy Fire Chief, sir.
Yeah, Mr. President, members of the board, as you know, I'm switch hitting for Chief Putney, who is vacationing in Hawaii, and he sends his mahalos and alohas and all of that. The Cambria Fire Department has been very active on a lot of different fronts over the last month. And to summarize our emergency response through March 13th, the department responded to 245 calls. Five of those were fire calls, and 103 of those were emergency medical type calls. There were 9 vehicle collisions, 91 hazardous situations, and 24 public service assists. The activity related to our fire prevention and education program, 6 residential new and remodeled fire plan reviews were completed. 13 residential and commercial inspections were performed, and that includes the water conservation inspections that go along with that for the community services district. There are no fire investigations for the calendar year of 2006. There is one pending investigation that's open from last year. The fuel hazard reduction program and our defensible space program, there's a declaration of a public nuisance that's on the ballot or on the agenda for today to begin the fire hazard fuel reduction program. We are finalizing some changes that go along with that program. The general manager alluded to some of those changes and stuff that we're looking at. And a full report on that that outlines all of those type of issues will be forthcoming from Chief Putney next month in April. This program is really significant to us this year, in particular because of the storm that we had in January and the increased fuel load that we're seeing, in combination with the fact that we have lost our grant funding that was available to us for the chipping weekies, basic firefighting techniques. This structure has been really valuable to us. These type of opportunities don't come along often, but when they do, we make the most of it, and it's been invaluable to us, and we really appreciate the opportunity that the homeowners have presented for us in this situation. Along the lines of training, I'm proud to announce that our training captain, Captain Mike Gallagher, was elected as the president of the San Luis Obispo County Training Officers Association for this upcoming year. So hopefully that shows the competence level that he has and will keep us on the cutting edge of the training in the county. As you know, we've been active with the information and the documentation from the storm. All of that information has been rounded up with, I believe, a few exceptions. We're trying to get that all taken care of and get that all presented to FEMA to hopefully collect and get reimbursed for all of the expenses that we were out due to the storm on January 2nd. And in the areas of disaster preparedness, we've got a couple of drills upcoming. And one of those is a confidential drill that I won't talk about here. Another one is an exercise that will be held in conjunction with the Hearst Castle Fire Department up at the Hearst Castle Visitor Center. And that's coming up next week. And that brings me to the end. If there's any questions.
Is the house on Huntington, Jim Buckley's old house?
I'm not sure. It's the one, it's on the...
Next to Ben's house?
South side of the street. It's a two-story design.
Older,
yeah. It's a tear-down.
Yeah.
And they've offered that up to us until the time that they get ready to tear it down and rebuild a new home there.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. President, question. Mark, consistent with the confidentiality requirements that are imposed on you, is there any way to break down for us the emergency responses that you get involved in terms of tourists versus residents?
That would be a report that we could come up with. I wouldn't be prepared to present that to you now, but that information would be available, barring names or any right. type of medical type of information.
Over the long haul, I think it would be helpful if you could include that breakdown in your report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Any more questions for Mark? Mark, I just noticed that we can't read your name tag on the TV, so why don't you identify yourself so that if someone calls the office, they know who they're talking
to. Yeah, I'm Assistant Chief Mark Miller, and my name tag would say Chief Robert Putney. So we just elected to turn it over.
No, I was looking at your badge right there.
Oh.
Thank you. And I like the fact you alluded to the depth of training and experience in your department.
Actually, I got mine because I was so afraid I was going to be called head bean counter, and that just didn't kind of sound.
Isn't that your official title?
Exactly. We have started on the district budget for the next 2 years. The forms and the worksheets have been sent out to the department heads, and that will all be brought back and compiled, and we'll see how it all kind of falls together. We're going to be in for a challenging next couple of years. As has been mentioned on numerous occasions, our revenue base is fairly stagnant, and costs are not. Last month, I reported for the current fiscal year that our general fund would be in a deficit of about $22,000. I finished the budget projections through February, and I have to ratchet that upward a bit to $44,000. And I detailed some of the expenses that are there that kind of caused that upward swing in the deficit. Kind of a heads up I would like to give you as well. I mentioned we're starting putting together the budget for the next 2 years. The second year of our next 2 year budget is going to be a challenge general fund wise, and it's going to be a challenge because of the Chevron money. We have been receiving money from Chevron for the last 3 years. The next year, the year for the period 06-07, will be the last Chevron payment, and that has been used to fund, basically, or subsidize or help pay for some of our operating costs in general fund. That terminates in one more year. So we're going to have to come up with some money in general fund to cover that shortfall that Chevron had been paying. Assistant Chief Mark Miller mentioned the fuel hazard reduction, and there's another item, the water and wastewater availability, and that commences an annual event each year, which is the assessment process, which goes on the tax roll, and of course that all comes back to us, and it's part of our revenue stream. That concludes my report. I certainly would be happy to answer or respond to any questions or comments.
I have a question.
Yes.
And I don't know whether this is for Art or for you or both, but what's this $44,000 in legal professional services connected with the Crosstown? Well, the Crosstown Trail, I see, is $34,000. What is that about?
That was dealing, and I'll let Art elaborate on it, it was still dealing with the KEMAC, what is that, easement situation? Art, I'll turn it over to you.
The only Crosstown Trail litigation still active is the condemnation action against Mr. KEMAC, which has been reset for trial in a few months. So that's going forward.
So this $34,000 has to do with just that case?
You know, I gave input into the numbers, but I never knew how Patrick came to the sum. So if he can identify it, I can explain it.
That's when we pay the legal expenses and we look at the specific court case, and the party involved, and that's how we allocated out accounting-wise. So these were expenses that were specifically identified as related to the Mr. Kemak case.
I charged less than that for a murder case. God.
Hey, don't kill the messenger here.
No, I'm just
no. I'm just reporting.
No, I'm just aghast.
This is worse than a murder
case. I mean, I just a stupid little...
I had just one question. We have been using general fund to subsidize both the water and wastewater. Is that correct? Do you think that the increase that we're planning this month will alleviate this number at all?
It'll alleviate our reserve balance and the fact that we won't be pulling down our reserves as much as we have been. So we will still need to cover this. It'll certainly help, but it's not going to solve the full problem.
Yes, John.
And I was going to mention something like that as well. At least we're not using the general fund for enterprise funds as much as we were. But how about the Chevron money? How much is that actually each month? And
the Chevron settlement came in two chunks. The first settlement was $6.4 or $5 million, and that was net of attorney fees. And then a secondary component of that was they would pay over a four-year span $700,000. The first 2 years, we received $100,000. The year that we're in right now, we got a $200,000 check from them. And this coming December, we will get our final payment, which should be $300,000. Well, be $243,000 after attorney fees. So that money has been put into the general fund and essentially goes to facilities management because they're responsible for maintaining the trail and all of the other expenses of dealing with the Crosstown Trail. So that's where that money has been placed. Now, we won't have that in the second year of our upcoming two-year budget cycle because that's just the last payment. We're about to receive our last payment.
So we've been spending it, not putting in a reserve fund, but actually using that money as it comes. And so
that's true.
And so it'll end.
Which means we'll either have to cut something out of general fund or somehow come up with the additional general fund revenue to compensate for that loss of the Chevron money.
Okay, thank you.
And the fire tender is a separate item?
That is completely separate, okay. Yes.
Okay. Hey, Greg, you want to have some full Monty fundraisers? What do you say? Huh?
We may have to resort to that, but I'm afraid nobody would pay to see that.
Contraire.
Is that the end of that discussion, or is there more?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Patrick, and we have other items from you later on. Okay. Are there any more reports, members, or otherwise? All right. Okay. I think we're ready for the consent agenda.
Item six. Item 6A is to approve the expenditures for the month of February 2006. 6B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meeting for February 23rd, 2006. 6C, adopt resolution 07-2006, authorizing the amendment to the ICMA 457 plan. And item 6D is to adopt resolution 10-2006, authorizing the rejection of claim number GC2607 per the recommendation of the Special District Risk Management Authority.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Okay. Could I just ask a question before we go on? The item C, the on loans, is that effectively the CCD employees loaning back their own money?
Yes.
Okay. So
that's their retirement. The elaboration. We're just scheduling it for a public hearing for next month.
Right. Do you need a motion for that? I think.
Well,
I would so move.
Second.
What is it?
Is the motion for all three hearing dates?
No, we'll do them one at a time.
Okay.
All right. Well, all those in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed? So carried.
The second one, 7B, is to adopt resolution 09-2006 to schedule the public hearing to approve the water and wastewater standby and availability charges for fiscal year 2006-2007.
I move adoption of the resolution.
Second.
All right.
And you guys.
More discussion? Those signify by aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you.
And the final one, 7C, for scheduling a public hearing to adopt the operating budget for the fiscal years 2006 through 2008. And I might note on the published agenda, it said just 2007 through 2008. So I'm making the correction that the staff report is correct. It's 2006-2008 because we're on a two-year budget cycle for operations.
And that's going to be next month.
Next month. We may phase it just depending on the work we do amongst ourselves within the organization and getting the numbers together.
So we would actually be able to adopt it in April, not just...
Maybe not, but we'll have the first public hearing next month.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
So move.
Second.
Okay. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
The next public hearing is 7D, and this is to adopt Resolution 08-2006, declaring a public nuisance within the Cambria Community Services District for the 2006 Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Program. I didn't even check with Chief Miller to see if he wanted to present this, or I didn't want to put you on the spot. I don't mind doing it. It's something we do annually.
I can read.
Okay, good. I'll turn this over to Mark Miller.
I can read.
We would recommend the approval of 08-2006 to declare a public nuisance and further direct the staff to proceed with mailing the notices to abate and remove the hazardous wildland fuels in order to maintain a community defensible space. As I stated earlier, that is a significant issue with us this year due to the increased amount of down timber and fuel load that we picked up from the storm. Direct publication of requests and proposals, RFP, for fire hazard fuel reduction contact package. There's approximately 6,240 vacant parcels located within the district that the fire department staff inspects for compliances. Notices are sent out to the property owners whose properties require fire hazard fuel reduction work. All the parcels that are inspected are found to either be in compliance or non-compliant by the July deadline and placed on a contract list if they're non-compliant. Then they're abated by the district's contractor, and the number of properties requiring clearance by the district's contractor typically varies between 150 and 300 parcels, or 350 parcels. And we're recommending that the approval...
Expect that it's going to cost you more this year.
That's a good possibility.
Right. The thing I would like to do, and Tammy touched on earlier, was about adding the certification of the lot of the cleaning operators. Did you follow the discussion that we had earlier in Tammy's report? And I think if we could, if it's legally possible to add that, the recommendation that there are certified lot clearers, I think it would be good.
And I'll work with the chiefs and Art to see that we can incorporate some language into the existing code section that provides for this.
Mm. Okay.
And the loss of our funding for the chipping weekend is going to also impact upon this too. So.
Well, wait a second. Peter reminded me, and I thank you, but. Why can't we incorporate that language into this resolution? As I understood Art's advice, clearly it's legal. It may not be enforceable, but that doesn't mean we can't put it in there and provide the illusion that if they don't do it, we're going to come down hard, because we all know Greg Sanders is not the guy to mess with. Right, Art? Can we do something in today's resolution?
Well, I agree. I wouldn't mess with Greg Sanders.
Don't tug on Superman's cape either.
This resolution is a declaration of a public nuisance, which is statutorily provided for the weed abatement or fuel reduction management program. We can place it in there as notice requirement, but I would still recommend we'd follow up with some legislation or rulemaking specific to it.
Well, you know, this topic that Peter brought up, and I should have, I'm somewhat derelict because I'm on the Forest Committee. This is a topic that we've discussed several times in the Forest Committee, something that I think every member of the Forest Committee feels very strongly about. I think one reason why we've, I think, gotten a hold of Pitch Canker is because we've made the people who are working on it a little bit more knowledgeable about how it spreads and what they can do to prevent it. So I just want to convey Peter's suggestion. I think it's important. We should do everything we can. If we can incorporate some language in this resolution and then follow up with your suggestion, that certainly is reasonable. But I think it's kind of important in this delicate forest of ours. I want to make it a little tougher. You know.
Can we just place this later on the agenda and we can work on the exact language and be able to...
Knowledge, but this is one of Chief Putney's areas of expertise. In fact, we've had the county involved. There's concurrent jurisdiction between the county and CCSD, so to speak, about when is a tree... leading to the point that it's a risk to the homeowner or to pedestrians or to anything else that might injure humans. And it's the county will send out an arborist. They have an arborist on call, and anytime anyone has any concern about a leaning tree, the county's contacted. The arborist is sent out. The arborist provides an opinion whether the tree is a risk, and then the county will take it down. Now, I didn't mean to step on your in your field, but it's kind of an interesting area. The Forest Committee has been dealing with that fairly regularly.
That's the advice to our residents and community if there's a leaning tree. Oh, all right, sorry.
Yeah, that's we get a lot of questions on that, and it's exactly right what you just said. It's not my field of expertise, but I am aware that there is an arborist from the county that works in the area, and they're the ones that have to make the choice on whether or not the tree is viable or whether it is a risk, and they make the decision, the ultimate decision on whether the tree comes down and arrange for removal.
Again, since we're in public education, part of our project here, our job here, who would they call? Do we have a name and a phone number or anything?
It's our Trinidad's office, code enforcement.
Okay.
They work through code enforcement.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I just interject that, you know, the county does have that, our Trinidad's office is very receptive to it. The problem is the county has a staff, I think there's two crews from Public Works, I believe it is, that are responsible for enforcing or responding to this countywide. It took me 4 years to get one of their trees, which was right on the corner of my lot, and was declared as a hazardous tree. It took about 4 years before they got around to it. They did a good job. And the guys that were working, once they got there, they're very efficient. They do the job. But that's when I found out they're stretched so thin that they just, you know, this is the whole county.
Don, if you would have told them your name was Greg Sanders, they would have done it the next day.
Well, I did tell them that. That's why it took 4 years.
Yeah, great. I think it's just the opposite when it comes to the county.
Well, let's ask the question while we have all the legal minds working. Who is responsible if a tree is about to tip over on somebody?
You're asking me?
I'm asking...
anybody?
Anyone, yeah.
The rules vary depending on whether it's a public owner or a private owner. Yeah. Private owner would be responsible if the tree was located on their property. If it's a public tree in our right-of-way and we have a reasonable inspection program and we don't, it isn't obvious that the tree is defective, then we wouldn't be liable. Yeah. We have a greater protection because we can't help but own a number of trees because of our public ownership.
Right.
At the same time, he his duties to protect the public, and if you call Art, I don't think it should take 4 years. I mean, I would be extremely surprised.
Thanks to Kathy Tanner, I have a number for Art if anybody is interested in getting that now.
Sure.
I want to clear Art's name, too. The fact is that he was on the as liaison to the Forest Committee initially, and I was on the Forest Committee. So we were talking the same, you know, to one and one. It wasn't that. It's he does the enforcement, tells that it goes down the chain of command, and then it's really the problem is the lack of commitment by the county to have a sufficient number of people to go out there and respond to it.
It's Mark. You are going to give us a number.
Yeah, I've got a phone number here for you if you're interested in it. It is area code 805-781-5705.
This is for Trinidad.
For Art Trinidad.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that very much. Did you say that you have some language now for us?
We did. Thank you. With that discussion, we were able to craft some language. So if you look on the back of your resolution 08-2006, thanks to President Shaldicott, who did communicate with me before the meeting about some concerns he had, so I want to give him credit for the foundational language Art and I used. Your third whereas paragraph will read, whereas it is in the public interest that hazardous fire fuels within said Cambria Community Services District be abated as an aid to fire prevention and community defensible space and protection of the fragile Cambria ecosystem. And then the other change or addition will be to Section 3, notice to destroy, abate, and remove fire hazard fuels shall be given by the district fire chief in conformance with cited health and safety code sections, semicolon. That notice shall include the CCSD recommendation that lot clearance be performed by locally certified owners and contractors.
Why do we need the word recommendation? Just let's put CCSD. If one of these tree guys comes to me and I see the word recommendation, I said, go ahead and do whatever you want.
Okay. That notice shall include that lot clearance be performed by locally certified owners and contractors.
Beautiful. That's just a beautiful thing. Thank you.
We put it in in Section 3, right after the language that the fire chief has in there now, notice to destroy, abate, and remove. Just right at the end of that, put a semicolon and add that sentence that we just read.
So logistically speaking, then a lot owner would contact the district to find out if the proper training and certification has been given to a contractor?
We're going to have to coordinate that with Green Space. You know, since Mr. Hawley came and presented that he could provide the training, I'm going to need
Absolutely.
To work with the chief and figure out how the logistics will work, and then we can report that back.
Okay. Both the maker and seconder are happy with the change in language?
I'm ecstatic.
Yes.
That's good.
Satisfied.
How about the rest of the board or not?
Just open the hearing and accept.
Okay, let's open that hearing for any comments from the audience on the subject we've just discussed,
which is the fire hazard fuel reduction program.
Okay. No movement is seen, so I'll close the public comment. All
right. So that action stands. Thank you. Yeah. I apologize for kind of running through that.
Yeah.
All right, so this final public hearing is to consider Ordinance 02-2006 approving a 5.4% adjustment each to the water and wastewater rates. I brought this up last month with regard to what we have going on in the water and wastewater enterprise funds. You'll see my report is basically a repeat from last month that there are deficits running in both of these funds. What we propose, Patrick and I, is that the 5.4% matches what we used as a consumer price index accelerator for the fire suppression assessment benefit. Each year, that assessment has a built-in accelerator clause, so we just basically said this is a cost of living index that we can justify and maintain as one that could also be related to the water and wastewater rates. I gave you all the background, as I did last month, with regard to the previous rate adjustments, the final one having, the last one having been done in September of 2003. I'm going to ask Carlos if he could put up the first sheet that shows just recent budget numbers. I gave him my copy, so I'm going to have to look up here at this one. Patrick prepared this, and we went over this morning. The far right column that says year-end June 2005, thank you so much, Carlos. The actual numbers show our revenues and our expenses for the water fund on top and the wastewater fund on the bottom, and I'm all the way to the right, showing last year at the end of June 05, there was a deficit in the water enterprise fund, our operating budget of $256,000. And then we move over to the left column for the water fund and show what we're predicting or projecting for the end of June of this year, 2006, being a $260,000 deficit in the operating funds. What I asked Patrick to do in that middle column, in that 5.4 cost of living increase, is to show what the deficit would be if you approve today the 5.4% adjustment. There'll still be a deficit, but it's less by about $85,000, $87,000. The same scenario holds for the wastewater fund at the bottom. Far right shows that the deficit was $279,000 for the last fiscal year. And for this year, it's projected to be $201,799. And you're going to ask, I know, because I did, what's the difference, Tammy? There's $70,000 there. That is the sludge hauling costs. Since Brian and his staff is now stockpiling them because of this recent embargo, so to speak, we're saving money, not hauling the costs. And there are some staffing vacancies right now within that department that are keeping the cost a little bit lower and not increasing that deficit. But with the 5.4% cost of living adjustment, that deficit will be $113,766. The next paper, please, Carlos.
Bottom line, we're losing over $500,000 a year.
We are. And the other question that came from constituents between the last time I met the agency is an investment formation, Patrick. I always forget this acronym. What does LAIF stand for? Local Agency? Trust Fund. Okay. That F doesn't stand for Trust Fund, but that's okay. You can see in March, or as of today, Patrick gives you the $9.3 million balance. But what he shows you that sometimes gets forgotten are the projects that we have assigned a portion of that LAIF fund for, and Patrick uses in the back of his mind for capital projects. Pine Knoll storage tanks, he currently has a number out there set aside, $2 million. The 30% design for the desal plant, he has $1 million set aside. So when we're spending money with Corollo and Padre and all those groups, that's where the money's coming from. You all recall several conversations with regard to the state loan high school well, the SR4, that $1.5 million that we received from the state. Those are restricted funds. We can't just arbitrarily spend those until we work something out with regard to the permanence of SR4. The biosolids dewatering project, right now we've got $1 million set aside there, and that's what, when Brian's doing his work with his staff, we're using those funds to spend on that project. The SCADA system is an information system that the supervisors use that the various infrastructure within water and wastewater can communicate. Right now is currently budgeted at $600,000. So projects totaling $6.1 million reduce the LAIF balance of $9.3 million down. And then I asked Patrick this morning to go ahead and put in those projected deficits of $462,000. It shows you that our savings account literally is at $2.7 million. So having to get the rate adjustments, while they're not always the best things to do, I want to commit to you that as staff and as your general manager, we've really looked at the cost, and there are other things to do. In the upcoming negotiations, we're going to be thinking out of the box with regard to personnel and staffing costs. There are items with regard to the overhead cost allocation that Director Sanders has brought up, and I think they're all valid points. There are ways that we can probably improve in areas that I might not even know of right now. And I think that you'll see later on in the agenda item when I recommend Black and Veatch, we could get that expertise extended to our staff to help us model that and best project what we believe the rate should be. So we're asking today for public input, your input, with regard to a rate adjustment.
Yes, sir. Joan?
Well, just to add, so after the rate study, then the staff would be trained and we wouldn't have to do that. In the future, we could make our own rate adjustment because we'd have been trained as to how to do it.
The model that we will end up getting out of the work product, and I want to thank you, too, because you mentioned this week, I've been very busy with all of you and constituents on the phone with regard to several of these agenda items, that I want to convince people when it gets to that item that the rate study is not something that's going to be bound in a book and stuck on a shelf. Hmm. It is a model. It is something that is going to be presented here publicly for you all to see and the public to see and comment on as to how we operate our government. And so it is definitely something that will result in a model that our staff will be able to use and then annually come to you and or whenever there's a project that needs to be accomplished, we can project out what the costs are and what the impacts to the rates will be. I also remind you of the one final item that Patrick likes to call us all stagnant customer base. The word somehow has a negative connotation sometimes. We are a fixed customer base, which is a little different than some communities who have
up in their minds, well, how you've been doing this all these years if you've been running in debt, if we've been running in a negative way. So we should know that we've been spending our general fund money in years past to make up the difference. Is that correct? And for the enterprise fund?
Only for the wastewater fund.
Okay.
The water enterprise fund has always been healthy and with regard to their reserves.
Okay.
The general fund has been supporting the wastewater enterprise fund, and that is something that will be discussed when we do the rate analysis and the modeling.
Okay. Thank you. Just as we asked public to comment, I thought they ought to have a full picture there. Thanks.
Any more board discussion before I open to the public? Okay, open this to the public. This is a public hearing considering the rate change. Anyone wishing to speak, please come forward right now. Seeing none, I will close the public section of this hearing and bring it back to the board.
May I say
something? Yes, sir.
Clearly, this is completely reasonable and appropriate, in my opinion. But I assume there's going to be some who might have financial problems. Is there anything in this recommendation that allows for some sort of discretionary forgiveness if a customer is unable to meet his bill?
I appreciate you bringing that up because I should have stated for the television audience and those who are attending here personally that the bi-monthly increase that this 5.4% will do to a customer who currently has a six-unit bill is $4.43, or an annual increase of $26.58. Now, if this still applies with the low-income wastewater fee that we have in the program we have, so anybody who's still eligible for that, we have an excellent staff who continues to work with people in recommending that. And I have to tell you, Director Funky Blue, we also work with people when they fall upon hard times or they need to work out payment plans if they have good payment histories with us.
I think this is a job well done. It's needed. And I applaud the work in putting all this together.
Mr. President, just a comment. I too, think that the rate increase is justified, but hearkening back to February meeting, I just have a philosophical problem with an interim rate adjustment. I think we'd be better served to wait until the results of the Black and Veatch, if we approve the Black and Veatch study, wait until the results of that study are in, and do this rate adjustment one time instead of twice this year. I understand where the suggested 5.5% increase came from. It may be justifiable, but just on philosophical grounds, not having the benefit of a full-blown rate analysis, including the possibility of creating a third tier of rates for hotel, motel, and vacation rental water rates. I can't support this.
Could I ask a question, Director Sanders? Would that not
be necessary, but the fact that we're just trying to prove if we do need to go out and borrow money, or if Patrick does decide to get crafty over there and decide to fund one of these capital projects or two of them, he has the ability to show that we've taken some action.
Are you suggesting he's not crafty?
He is. Check out his tie today. You guys didn't comment on his tie. It's cool. Anyway, I want to be able to have the ability to show anyone, a potential lender, that we're moving forward as we work on our rate analysis.
Well, do we still need public hearing? Because if, okay, could we make the motion with a caveat noting that that we're not anxious to make a rate increase at this moment? Or Greg, maybe I'm sorry, I got tongue-tied all of a sudden trying to think that.
Well, I understand. I understand the direction you're going. I just think that we ought to have the benefit of the study before us, and having looked at the water and sewer rates and considered the impact of those uses in town that consume the most water, I think a third tier of rates is going to be necessary. I think we're going to have to take a hard look at, for example, the price of water to the state park campground, and encourage water savings in those types of uses. The bottom line is, rather than do this incrementally, I'd rather see us do a one-time rate increase with all of the facts before us and a complete overhaul of our rate structure.
I hear what you're saying, but the fact is, as Peter and Joan pointed out, that we got the deficit now, and
we
know with this reasonable adjustment we can make a major dent in the deficit. And everything that you're saying, I agree with, that the study is going to help us, and it may create a third tier, but I don't see this move they're doing today would any way prejudice our freedoms or our options at the end of the year.
No, I don't think it prejudices anything. I just think that we're better off if we have all of the facts before us, have an opportunity to do a complete overhaul of the rate structure and do it one time. And I think that while the deficits look relatively large in the totality of things, I think it would be possible to make up those deficits with that one-time rate increase, even if it's a year from now, particularly since we're on a two-year budget cycle.
Can I make a motion?
I don't know how it's going to go, but I'd like to use a kind of an analogy that is sort of just came to my mind. So it appears that to me the public is well enough informed that that we are in deficit. To continue the deficit at this level would seem to be a little imprudent. An analogy I have is that on a battlefield, you know, a wounded person is a guy, a corpsman that gets out there and puts the immediate bandage or whatever else is needed, and that person is then at least.
I can see the logic on both sides. I just have a philosophical problem with the approach that we're taking. That's all.
May I make a motion?
Yes.
I'd like to move to adopt Ordinance 02-2006, approving a 5.4% adjustment each to water and wastewater rates.
Second.
Could I have a roll call, please?
I'd still like to say expand that motion a little bit if we could. I was trying to put some words down, something like, could we move to initiate a rate increase process based on the information that we have that will begin with the 5.5% increase and then culminate after a rate increase analysis has been done and another amount has been determined?
You're subtle because you just upped it to 5.5.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, whatever the number was. Sorry. 5.4.
If I can speak to that, I understand where you're going. I am hopeful that once the study is done, it is demonstrated that we can adjust water rates, cure the deficit, and have a very, very minimal impact, if any, on residential water rates. And it may turn out to be mm-hmm. that the 5.5%, 5.4% rate increase is unnecessary.
Mm. Well, you're really optimistic.
We'll see.
I should add that my cable bill went up another $3 this month with no fanfare.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's because you watch BBC News. That's the only reason why I don't know. Okay, is there a motion to second it? Don seconded
it? I second it.
Okay, did you change it with Joan's language? Because if so, I want to clarify that for the record. Okay, all right. So the motion stands as made and seconded. Okay.
Director Funky Ballou?
Yes.
Director Villeneuve?
Yes.
Director Coben? Director Sanders?
No.
And President Chaldicott?
Yes. Motion carries.
Greg, how does it feel to be in the minority? Huh, buddy?
Well, it's really lonely. I'll tell you.
If the folks from the Citizen Build-Out Committee would bear with us, perhaps we could take a five-minute break.
Thank you.
We got three. All right. We're now ready for Item 8A, which is the status report by the Build-Out Reduction Program. And may I just say on behalf of the board, we're so pleased that this committee worked so hard and so diligently in such a short time to come up with something which is going to be useful to us. So, Tammy?
Thank you. You are so right. And I've had the great pleasure, along will be the presenter today, Ron Crummett. Is Ron here? I saw him. There he is. John Linder. There's John. Wayne Ryburn. Bill Allen. Gail Robinette. Bob Hill, who is with the Land Conservancy and could not be here today. Wayne Atto with Green Spaces in the back. And Jeanette Johnson. Did Jeanette make it? So that's the majority of your Citizens Committee, and I think they deserve a huge round of applause. So today their report is going to be summary information of their objectives and accomplishments to date, and their plan is to return to you in April with a very formal presentation and allow for community input not only today but then. So Wayne Perrick, if you'll approach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, and thank you certainly for our great team. I think we have a PowerPoint presentation that we're going to view. And I'd like to take this opportunity, certainly, to thank you, President Chaldicott, and the CCSD board for the opportunity to serve on the Build-Out Reduction Program Citizens Finance Committee. As you can see from this impressive roster, or will see from this impressive roster, we have a representation from a number of groups and individuals that work closely with our community, including North Coast Alliance, San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy, Green Space, PROS, Concerned Cambrians, United Lot Owners of Cambria. We also have individuals with expertise in county government, real estate, and small business. So it's a diverse, exceptionally intelligent, smart, interactive group with whom I've had the honor to work with. Next slide, please. So our report today provides a summary of the committee's objectives and accomplishments to date, and it's a preview of a much more comprehensive report that we'll share with you on April 27th. If we review the purpose of the build-out reduction program, it is to maintain the quality of life in Cambria that residents and visitors enjoy. Of course, to satisfy the CEQA requirement to mitigate the growth-inducing impact of the new water source from desalination, and to preserve open space that we all enjoy, and to match the final build-out numbers to correspond with the current resources and infrastructure. Next slide. We believe there's a lot of benefits to the community from this program. They include preserving Cambria's village character, a phrase that probably only a gifted poet or a writer could expand upon, but a description that I think we can all relate to, and one that we certainly understand and encompasses our sense of place. It retains visitor appeal and protects the natural environment, our forests. It is a key component to resolving our longstanding, and that we have to add some additional connections to bring us up to 4650. Our second goal was to establish a viable funding plan for this build-out reduction program, and three, to determine an equitable approach to the plan. Next slide, please. So we've evaluated many, many funding ideas. And in April, we'll give you specific data regarding the funding options. But probably the top three ways of bringing funds into this program result from, a build-out reduction fee that is included as part of the connection fee for those on the CCSD water wait list, or B, a program that transfers a small number of water entitlements to land trusts that in turn will generate significant lot retirement funds, and C, a component in our water rates that is set aside for lot retirement and maintenance of those lots. Next slide. So with what we know, do we believe the build-out reduction is feasible? And the answer is a resounding yes. And more importantly, when we implement this program, all the options that we present to you that will be part of this program will be voluntary. No property owner will be forced to sell their land for the purposes of this program. Next slide. So our next steps are to prepare a detailed presentation of the program that we've just given you a taste of at the April 27th meeting. We also anticipate hosting a town hall meeting that will be announced, but it'll probably be sometime after the April 27th meeting. And then next slide, please. Obviously, if you, the public may have some questions or some input, and Tammy Ruddock, our CCSD general manager, has agreed to be the point person on this program. So if you have any questions or comments or suggestions, please bring that information to Tammy, and Tammy will bring that information to us. So with that, thank you for your attention, and we value your input, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you, Wayne. That's a nice, clear report. Do any of our board members want to pick up on this? Go on, Jill.
Well, just thank you very much. I know we gave you 60 days to do it, and you did it. And I think you all should be really impressed with your process, and I'm very delighted myself.
Well, we have a great team, yeah. And next month will be the proof of the pudding, but we'll have a lot more details to share and a lot more input.
So your committee will stay with the process through a town hall meeting? And
yes, we will.
So, great. Thank you.
All right.
Well, thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne, very
much.
Okay.
I had just one question. There was a mention of rates, water rates. Will that be part of the item we're going to deal with later on today, the beach study, Black and Beach?
We will incorporate that suggestion because the committee will have had their plan or their ideas finalized by the time we have this consultant brought on board. And during the request for proposal process, I did mention that the build-out reduction program, whatever might come out of it as a recommendation. I brought this back from last month. I'm still recommending that we move forward with Black and Veatch in this resolution. There were two questions that were asked of me, and I think they were very good questions. One was we were asked to discuss with Black and Veatch and Muni Financial with regard to their cost proposals that they contained within their submittal documents, whether they were rigid with their numbers and or they were, if we needed to supplement Muni Financial's. As you recall, Muni Financial's did not include a component for engineering analysis for the capital infrastructure program. I did confirm and did attach their revised proposal, which now took their cost proposal from $82,000 to $92,000. So it's about $10,000 to hire their subconsultant or one of their subsidiary engineering firms to basically take what we have today as an existing capital infrastructure or capital improvement program and review it and analyze it, but not to think about what it might cost or what funding mechanisms might be for enhancement of our capital infrastructure system. That is something that Black and Veatch will do in their assessment portion of the study. So I still, when I compare the two, I think that's a strength that Black and Veatch offers that Muni right now still is just a little bit behind on. The second question was Director Funky Blue's question with regard to Tom Peterson, who is one of the team members of Black and Veatch's project team. He was licensed as a CPA, but there was that note that said inactive next to his California license. He holds licenses in several states. Apparently, that's just a technicality that the exact meaning is that he is on inactive status, that he's not able to practice public accounting. He can't give an opinion on the fairness of financial statements. His license is still current, but and he does require, it requires him to have continuing education hours, which he maintains. They did tell me, too, that if we required him to get that back current, he would do it. I just didn't see the need since he holds a current CPA license. It's just from another state, since his work will be mostly reviewing financial numbers once the engineers get finished with their analysis. Last but not least, even though it's not contained in here, I did one last review before I came into the meeting last night, and there is a couple of days that Black and Veatch contains within their cost proposal for staff training with regard to the modeling. And our staff is really up on Microsoft Excel, okay? It is not going to take 2 days to train them. So I think there's the potential there for a few thousand dollars to save, and I think we'll look for other ways and express that to Ann Bowie, who's the project manager. I think we can find other ways, since we have a really good, competent staff in the finance department, to probably cut some costs. And so I'm still recommending Black and Veatch.
I appreciate the follow-up.
I thought it was just good to hear you say, boast on the expertise of our staff, because for a long, long time we didn't have that expertise, and I think our staff have been very diligent getting themselves up to speed in office and accounting skills, and I congratulate them on doing that. It's really great.
And that's even Patrick. You know, he teases himself because we call him a bean counter, but he knows that Microsoft Excel and any of the database programs that I know that that's what they're talking about using. And any of the modeling, I just don't see 2 full days needing to be required for the staff to be trained.
Okay. What's the pleasure of the board?
Of the water rates that we currently impose on the ratepayers in Cambria. And that would include the possibility of the creation of a third tier of rates in addition to the residential and commercial tiers that we now have adopted, that would focus on the uses in Cambria that consume the most water, particularly uses like the State Park campground, motels, vacation rental units, and so forth. If we do anything between now and the time we have a supplemental water source in the form of a desalination plant, we have got to get our arms around lowering water consumption at those kinds of facilities. And I've come to the conclusion that the only way to do that is through pricing. and I think that this study will help us get there. I think we need to emphasize this is not a study just to go through the mathematical formulas necessary to determine what rates should be. This study will focus on a complete structural overhaul of our water rate system.
Sure. I was thinking as you were discussing that, one of our big problems is that during a shortage period, say August, September, that's when our motels are usually fuller, so they are putting a load on a system which, as individuals, we're reducing our load at home, but they can't do that. So
correct.
There should be a financial burden placed on them for that reason.
Yeah. And, Mr. President, you'll recall when you and I visited with the state park superintendent for this district, and we were amazed to discover the number of people that go through the state park campground every year. And I think we need to be mindful that we have a contractual obligation to supply water to the state park campground, but that doesn't mean that we cannot encourage water conservation there. And I think this study will help us do that.
Thank you. Yeah.
I might add that the state parks is contemplating expansion to the San Simeon Park.
That's right.
And I do think that we'll probably be able to get cooperation from the state parks because they've been very responsive in the past. With,
I'm sure we will get their cooperation.
Yeah. Anyone else? I think I do.
You want to make one?
Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead, John.
We'll move the recommended actions and make it short and sweet.
Second the motion.
All right. Any more discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Me.
One opposed. So carried. Thank you.
Very quiet opposition.
We're not going to deal with it. Going to shed some light on the subject.
Very good.
All right.
This is 8C to approve a commitment to provide for ongoing operation and maintenance of the Main Street lighting between Cambria and Burton Drives. Prior General Manager Vern Hamilton approved and brought to you, and this board approved an agreement that provided for some infrastructure along Main Street enhancement project, and included within that agreement that's attached was the provision for some streetlights operations and maintenance. And that number at the time, and I did the research and just didn't include it in here, was this 25 PG&E lights, and there was an estimated cost of $3 each per month or $900 a year. Okay, so I provide you that information in the recommendation sections. That sounds like what you all knew would be the total cost for this type of project if you were to approve that the district would commit to it. What they've done through their hard work through NCAC and Jim Lopes is, and it got up to 45 lights, and there's been discussion about 40 lights, and now his proposal after going through all these meetings is that the looks like the maximum might be 35 lights, street lights in the East Village or between Cambria and Burton Drives. And Jim estimates the annual cost at $3,600. And this is to operate, maintain, and the electrical power cost. And his suggestion is that the district would hire an electrical contractor, come in and just do an annual maintenance type thing instead of, you know, just coming out every time someone called, or we would use a staff member to do this. So I give you all of the mathematics, and I give you the background. What I have also, I went to talk to Patrick this morning just to confirm and to let you all and the public know that the district currently pays for other streetlights, the maintenance and the operations. And those are the ones along Moonstone Beach. Those are the ones up in the Leimert tracks. There's two of them. And we think we pay for the ones in West Village. Now, I say that and chuckle, but it's because of the way it's described on our PG&E bill that we're doing the questioning now. Is that what we're paying for? We believe that might be the case. So those bills total $12,000 a year to the district. And because a couple of them might have been on a prior lighting district or assessment district, and then they bounced out because previous boards or staffs didn't keep up with you know, following through with keeping the lighting districts there, the district has assumed responsibility for that. So right now we have before you, and I'm certainly, if you want to hear from Jim Lopes, he's here today for you to hear that, that if you undertook or approved the proposal or the 35 lights, that it would just be keeping with what we're doing now with the other districts. And one of the suggestions I've heard is that maybe we look into a lighting district again and the assessment in these purported areas, because the majority of them are visitor serving with the exception of Lemert. And that concludes. Again, I offer up Jim Lopes if he wants to address you or approach you or if you have questions.
Yes, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm Jim Lopes from County Planning and Building Department. I appreciate your willingness to follow this along, give us time to work things out with the North Coast Advisory Council, which we seem to have done as of last week with a recommendation from them. And that process has been long. There have been changes in this project. As Tammy mentioned, we had a conceptual plan for 26 lights that we based a grant application on. Lights would be the minimal number for adequate safety along with the Main Street Enhancement Project. And with that number, you would have what we thought would be kind of minimal lighting. That can be reduced down with some adjustments, and we're willing to do that. We definitely want to try to do that. I gave you a sort of an example number of 35 lights, because we want to try to head down to the 30 that the North Coast Advisory Council is recommending. And if we get there, fine, but it may be 35, 36, 38. We don't know. But we want to accompany the Main Street Enhancement Project with lighting that will attract people, encourage people to walk along the crosstown trail as well as the sidewalks, and also provide safety for people to see cracks or things that are in the sidewalk, and also be able to see ahead of them, see who's coming, what they look like, in time for them to give some kind of reaction time. So, again, this street lighting project is part of the Main Street Enhancement Project. It's a component that really kind of ties in with the Crosstown Trail. And there's a project that has had changes, too. It started out as a creek trail. It ended up on Main Street as you know, and it's had its own several changes. We've also wanted to have the street lights look as good as they can in Cambria without being obtrusive, without creating conflicts with dark sky. We held a meeting with the North Coast Advisory Council last February. Well, actually, they held the meeting, but we attended, and the council invited a dark sky expert, somebody who knows a lot about that subject, and with his presentation he noted that streetlights are can be compatible with dark sky and keeping the stars visible at night. So with that encouragement, we went ahead, and the council was willing to then consider the kind of street lighting that we have available now. And that street lighting is a custom design. It's not something that PG&E readily provides. We have a lighting designer who can work with the manufacturer to really kind of customize the lighting on the street so that it doesn't glare, it doesn't shine up. And so we're advocating that private fixtures be used rather than PG&E fixtures. And with that, we're recommending then that that a private contractor be hired then to maintain those lights. Probably it would take 1 or 2 years before you'd see any bulbs burning out, maybe a year. So there's some time there before you'd see some expenses needed. Now, we really appreciate your willingness again to consider taking on these street lights as an obligation. Certainly the Planning and Building Department isn't ennobled enough to take that on. And we're not local enough either. We feel that we can help you, though, in various ways. If you're interested in forming a lighting district or something, we will certainly do what we can to support that. But we encourage you to consider the North Coast Advisory Council's recommendation
Lighting district is in a, there are different types, but there are assessment districts that require a 218 approval, similar to exactly, and not similar, but exactly what we did for the fire assessment. So it would require a determination of what we're going to build, how much it's going to cost and maintain, and then a vote of those who are going to assess, and a majority vote. I believe it's majority, either that or two-thirds, that would require for it to pass.
Then the lighting district would be responsible for maintaining the lights?
They would. If we administered the district is only a financing mechanism. It's the same word district as CCSD district, but it's a financing mechanism, and we would administer the, collecting the money and providing the lights.
But the point is the money would not come from our general fund. It would come from the assessments.
That's correct. Another method that isn't suggested that could be used is a business improvement association, which doesn't require a 218 vote. It requires an ordinance of the supervisors, which adds a certain amount to business license taxes and business license fees that are then again used for improvements in a downtown area.
Okay, say that again.
There's something else called a Business Improvement Association, a BIA, and that is an ordinance that the Board of Supervisors can adopt that adds a certain amount to the business license fees that is used for downtown improvement purposes. It could be used for lighting, sidewalks, and things of that nature. The court cases have held that that's not a 218 required vote and only is an ordinance of the Board of Supervisors.
This lighting that's between Burton and Cambria Drive, have we gotten any feedback from businesses? Are they supporting this? Because I'll tell you, I can't speak for my colleagues, but individuals that have contacted me are not big favorites of creating light in Cambria. But I can understand that business owners being in that area of town might. Have we gotten any support from business owners?
We'd probably let Jim answer that question because I know that they've studied it, but nobody has contacted me or the district personally with regard to any of the merchants. But have they been involved in the NCAC process, Jim?
Well, there have been, of course, members on the NCAC board that are business people, but we haven't had a concerted dialogue with business owners to find out if there is support or what that extent might be. We've had individuals from that segment of the Main Street corridor be very interested and supportive, but only one or two at that point. So,
could we have Ann Wyatt, the chair of NCAC, talk to that? Because we've attended several meetings.
Sure. Ann is here, so she can make comments on that. And then I don't want Jim to forget to mention that the lights are visible for people in the public. Are they still up there or installed, the pilot lights?
Those lights are PG&E lights. Those aren't the ones we're proposing. What we're proposing is the one that's in the product sheet you have.
Carlos has that on the overhead now while Ann comes up to the podium.
Jim, don't go away. I have a question for you when Ann's finished.
Okay. Thank you, Ann. Yes.
Thanks, Ann Wyatt, Chair, North Coast. And we are all supportive. The council did vote to support this 8-1 at our March 15th meeting.
And how long has this been before the council? Just to give us some idea that.
I believe 5 years was the number thrown around. Five years since the grant was received.
Right. Thank you.
I haven't been along around that long. No.
Any more questions for Ann? Where was she?
Well, but the recent months, there's been meetings with, well attended, with people coming with many voices.
We have heard many voices. And I do have some more information here. I don't know if now is the time or if you want me to wait on that.
What sort of technical information or?
Well, just a little more about the history and the pitch here, I guess, what we've heard from people, why we'd like to see your board take some action today.
Why don't you just give us a quick reason why we should take action today?
Okay, yes. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. And I appreciate your board's leading role in the Crosstown Trail and the Main Street improvement. I walked here today along the trail, as I do many days and nights, and I would very much appreciate the option to use it a little more easily with some light. So I think Tammy and Jim have covered most of my points, so I don't need to go through my whole flowery speech here. But as we've heard, there is urgency to this need. The grant needs to be done by July, I believe, for the grant funding to come through. Is that correct? July. So some action needs to be taken. If ongoing maintenance and operational expenses aren't covered, then the grant that would cover the installation of these lights is at risk. We've heard that your board, the precedent, that your board is now paying for streetlights, and there was a 2003 commitment to help fund the ongoing expenses, and that you have been a lead agency in the crosstown trail construction through your Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission. Also, there's a history of county partnership. I come here today with full support from Supervisor Bianchi. She's sorry she couldn't be here today, but she very much supports the installation of these lights and hopes for your support with the maintenance and operation. Also, the supervisors are due to award the bid and provide funding for the completion of the Main Street and Crosstown Trail project on Tuesday. So there's some time relevance there. They're hoping to finish this project by late summer. Also, we have an opportunity here. We have an opportunity for increased public safety and user access to the new Crosstown Trail at a very low cost. If we're indeed looking at a $3,600 annual fee, I estimate that to be about 60 cents per person per year. I think that's a very small price to pay for both increased community safety and access to this pedestrian amenity. There are many benefits that can come out of this. Taking this a step further, these lights making our public areas a more pleasant, amenable place to walk. If we can just get a few residents and tourists out of vehicles, we'll see better air quality, decreased congestion, better health, and finally and most importantly, a pride and recognition.
PG&E lights, the ones that we were looking at. And that was a way that we decided not to go, even though they were more economical, and I kind of went, whoops, because, tell me about it.
Well, the lights on Burton are two new examples of what PG&E can provide. The colonial light that you see at the bus stop is less than perfect in our opinion. It really doesn't have performance characteristics that we really need to have to do all the things that Ann was recommending in such good language.
Is that in the flowery speech?
Yes, I can refer to that. item A.
I was just concerned because I believe there were some cost benefits if we went with PG&E.
Well, actually, PG&E does charge for maintenance. It's not free, and they charge about $10 per light per month, or about $120 a year. We find that to be more than what you would probably pay, well, that you most likely would be paying a private contractor to maintain the lights. You'd be saving money to, in other words, to not use PG&E lights for maintenance. Since the lights are being provided by a grant, there's no cost issue in providing the lights. It's more of an ongoing issue of maintenance. And I think that with the information I have, I can pretty solidly say that it would just be cheaper to not use PG&E lights.
I have another question. We started with the county's recommendation of, I don't know, was it 45?
It's 26. Then after the construction preliminary design, it was 45. But there were some places where we could make adjustments, and we can get it down probably below 40. I don't know if I would. I can't easily say 35. It's a little indefinite to do that. Sorry
well,
to interrupt.
When NC... AC? Got all these acronyms. When they approved this by an 8-1 vote, did they approve the number of lights?
Their vote was for 30 lights as a goal or some number above that to provide the minimum needed for public safety. So if, for instance, we have spacing problems to get light, some light, some degree of light for safety than to go higher than 30. But 30 is the goal.
30 is the goal?
Yes.
Okay. And where exactly would they be spaced along the cart? Who makes that determination? You, the county?
Well, no, we defer to electrical engineers, and they've done a lighting design for which you've paid infrastructure costs to install boxes where nearby lights will be installed. So that spacing varies between 80 to 140 feet, quite a distance, and it varies for various reasons, but that spacing is meant to use a 100-watt bulb and the kind of light that we're recommending.
Now, Ann spoke about a property holder was willing to chip in on the costs. Is that
yes,
just like then? But and I don't see why we can't do both, but I like Art's idea about the BIA because it seems like this would benefit the commercial folks in town. I mean, it would benefit if you adopt the county's reasoning and Ann White's reasoning, I suppose it would benefit others.
Yes.
No disrespect, I disagree with you, but I hear what you're saying. But why can't we, let's assume this is approved, can we follow up on the BIA, not only on the BIA funding that Ms. White is willing to chip in and Mr. Miller apparently is willing to chip in, and at the same time move with this? Is that inconsistent? In other words, can we promise, by the way, I'm not going to agree to this, but I have a feeling my colleagues are not going to go with me, but I'm just thinking ahead. But if my colleagues erroneously agree to this, can we at the same time pursue alternative funding sources for the future?
Yes. Sure.
Okay.
We can do that. But just to be clear, the BIA ordinance has to be adopted by the Board of Supervisors. We can't do that locally.
Well, can maybe while Jim is here, we can ask him to use his influence and put in a good word. You know what I mean, Jim?
Yes, and I would like to offer some assistance in terms of public participation and, getting people enthusiastic about it. We're going to be offering some sub-regional workshops around the county this year in regards to financing infrastructure, and those mechanisms that Art mentioned will be included. So we'll be sure to invite all the business owners along the corridor.
Okay. I'd like to ask a question.
Yes.
Jim, what would be the average amount of maintenance on an annual basis? And what kind of maintenance is that by?
My lighting designer recommends, and I think we mentioned this, that once a year you have an electrical contractor go through all the lights, change the lamps, clean them, and then they're all done in one day, basically, so you don't have back-and-forth costs. Every 3 years or so, the ballast that these lights have needs to be replaced. Mm-hmm. And that can be part of that annual maintenance and be a little additional work they do. It's just it's like changing a light bulb, basically changing the ballast.
Do you have to be an electrical contractor to be able to do that?
No, but you got to be bright.
Well,
we've got lots of bright people working for us.
No dimwits, huh?
Well, I think a contractor would be the minimum you'd want, somebody with insurance and so on. But
Mr. President, I have a question of Jim Lopes. You mentioned that the conditions of the grant funding require that some decision be made by July. Is that right?
Well, we need to start a contract process by July. We need to have some design done, have the construction design done, and be in the bid process by
which we were reminded once again that the general fund of this district is battered, bloodied, and beaten. And the board just approved a a rate increase for water and sewer fees, and now we're being asked to appropriate on a ongoing permanent basis $3,600 a year, which is bound to rise over time as costs go up. My suggestion is that we put off a decision on this until next month, when we can balance the expenditures that are requested here against the other requests for expenditures from the general fund when we have the proposed budget presented to us. And if this project stacks up as being worthy, then we can approve it. If not, then we can do something else.
What would the something else be? Have them give the money back and not put the lights up?
No, I'm thinking that maybe some of these ideas about alternative sources of funding might be able to be more fleshed out and presented to us in
a
month.
We should assume that brand new lights that may be installed, say, I don't know when, a year from now, but they're actually operational, won't need much maintenance for a year or so, that we're not talking about spending any of our district money for 1 or 2 years. And I would think that given the fact that we've talked about this for so long and the community has spent so much energy and emotion on coming to the conclusion they have through the NCAC, that it's only fair that we go ahead and make our decision today, knowing that we have a couple of years to come up with the money for it.
A couple of years? Certainly not more than a year.
It won't need any maintenance in the first year. It'll take a year to get built.
Okay, I don't know, Joan. Promises of no money. You know, this started out as a $900 commitment less than 3 years ago. Now it's four times that 3 years later. I'm not a seer, I'm just a country lawyer, but you know it's going to be more next year, and as Greg says, the following year. I mean, you know it.
We're already spending $12,000 a year on lighting, and this is not, that 900 isn't adding too much more to that.
Yeah, let me say, I'm not suggesting that we do anything rash here, and I think the project is meritorious, but I think by continuing this for a month, we can generate a whole lot of information that may give us some ideas about alternative funding sources. And that would go not for just these particular lights, but the lights that we've somehow inherited that are all over Cambria. When you start adding it all up and you balance the amount we're spending on energy costs and maintenance of these lights against the deficit in the general fund and the demands on the general fund for very significant public safety issues, I think it's incumbent upon us to weigh carefully the decision. And I don't think we have enough facts in front of us today to do that.
Well, I agree with Art that our obligation is to be concerned about the general fund, but
and has nothing to do with offending the county. The county is not responsible for the reserve, for the general reserve fund. We are. And in 03, I'm sure Patrick will tell you, our reserve fund wasn't spouting blue wink either. Am I right? You know, and so we thought, I remember arguments from my colleagues saying, well, it's only $900. What's the big deal? And now it's $3,600. Well, nothing the first year. Well, we don't know that. What's the big deal? And I can think of counting the guy who counts the trout or steelhead, 75. That's not a lot of money. What's the big deal? And the community center over 2 years, 100,000. What's the big deal? I mean, after a while, these little big deals, they add up. And there's a reason why we have a deficit. And it has nothing to do with offending the county. The county, I respect what the county's done. But we have financial issues that we have to worry about, and our primary, in fact, I think, our exclusive loyalty is to our constituency, and secondarily to everybody else, including the county. The county has been more than hospitable and fair with us on this issue, but yeah, we've got some money issues.
Well, one way we could save $12,000 right now is to turn the other lights off. If we don't feel that lights are an urgent need in our community, we could just stop stop paying for lights altogether.
Wonderful.
So, okay.
Let me stop you.
What you're saying is fine. It's just like saying, yes, I believe in, you know, God and motherhood and apple pie. But the point is, we have a particular project before us. It's gone through a long process. A lot of people have given their input on it. And I do not see that this is increasing our indebtedness or our concern for the future to any great deal. And we're going to approve it eventually. It seems to me today is the day to do it.
More than God, motherhood, and apple pie, I believe in fiscal responsibility.
I think there's a danger of doing nothing because I sense that the opportunity is going to go away. I do feel that we could approve one of these three and also ask staff to investigate the funding sources and make that conditional if necessary. And we've not just let it go slide away through lack of opportunity. Yeah,
my suggestion, Mr. President, would be to do that, but do it in the reverse order, to have the staff investigate the funding sources first, report back to us next month, and then make a decision based upon the information that they generate.
Would there be time for staff to do that within 1 month? I know you're busy.
I'm thinking budget and build-out reduction is going to keep us busy, but we can do the best we can.
Well, I'd like to test it out and just make the motion that we go ahead and approve this project for today and then continue studying process to...
You've got a choice of one or two.
Well, we'll make our own. We won't choose that. We approved a commitment to provide for ongoing operation and maintenance on Main Street lighting. I'd like to move that we do that.
If someone will support the motion, then I'll go ahead and ask for public comment.
Okay. Do you want a second?
Yes, please.
Okay, to move it along, I'll give you a second.
Okay. I have two requests to speak, one from Richard Bonsack, followed by Barbara Holt, if you'd be ready, please.
There's another gentleman, too.
Thank you. Richard Bonsack. I'm the owner of the Burton Forge property down on Burton Drive, the old blacksmith shop property. And I think the streetlights is a very worthy pursuit. You have the life safety issues. I, as a merchant or an owner of property there, would be willing to participate in offsetting that cost. I would hate to see the opportunity, the funding, that opportunity elude us somehow, and this opportunity no longer be available. So I would just encourage that we do work in a timely fashion. I would also like to have input in the design. Are we going to have an opportunity, Anne, to comment on the design? We are, James. Okay. So I would like to suggest that maybe all the merchants can be brought into the loop. I'd be happy to help in that regards to contacting, canvassing the area, and getting a consensus as far as design goes. But, you know, aesthetics in the business district in East Village are very important to us. And I understand Mr. Ballou's concerns about escalating cost over the years. That's always an issue. But from our perspective, and I'm speaking for myself in the East Village, $3,600 a month, at least initially, I think is money well spent. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Barbara Holt.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate being able to address you folks. Oh, hello. I'm a resident of Cambria and very interested in the community as it grows. I have a number of acquaintances and friends that have attended the NCAC meetings with regard to the lighting issue. Some of them are merchants on Burton Drive and also along the area where Soto's is and up towards the Rod and Reel. Many of them have not or feel that they have not been addressed about this issue. And a number of them feel that the expense to lighting, although it addressed the funding issue that you so nicely brought up, their stores are closed by the time the lights would go on. And for that reason, they don't feel that it's going to bring visitors to the merchants that are along that area, nor past the Standard Station, nor towards where Soto's is. They do appreciate the interest, but they don't feel the value directly to them. I agree with the gentleman that spoke before me. Let's see a final design before we go forward. And lastly, I don't know if I misunderstood Anne or not, but I heard her say something about this could affect property taxes, and I need to be told yes or no. Anne? This could come back to property taxes?
Address the board, please, if you would.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I haven't done this before.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I heard Anne Wyatt correctly saying that this could possibly, funding this project could possibly come back to the residents in Cambria as a form in their property taxes.
I don't think she said that. What I thought, Art mentioned the possibility of a lighting district, which would require the property owners to pay through an assessment district. It would be, I'm sure, a nominal sum when spread out all over the property district. But I was more interested in this other funding mechanism, which is a formation of a BIA district, which would allow the merchants, who I believe would benefit the most, to fund this without charging the CCSD general fund.
In response to the merchant situation, I'm sure that we're all very aware that our economy is not as prosperous as we would hope that it would be right now with the merchant community. I know as an active participant in trying to help the situation that there are now 17 buildings available in Cambria, and there are two or three more merchants planning to leave the community. And I think we should address that thinking as well. And see what the merchants really do think about spending any more money. They're in dire need. I shouldn't say dire. That's a little bit too strong.
Remember, you're talking to the television audience as well. So if you're trying to say that Cambria's going broke,
Oh, I didn't say that at all, sir. And actually, I don't appreciate that.
No.
I am not saying Cambria is going broke. I'm saying that Cambria could do better for itself by supporting our merchant and visitor trade. That is exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
And as far as the merchants, I feel that we should perhaps consider their situation first off, then going forward and spending money on the lighting. The lighting is for public safety so that our visitors can walk safely on the new sidewalks that we have put in, and for the Cambrians as well. And I think that issue should be considered.
Okay. Could I answer just two questions?
Yes, sir.
One is that the design, I believe, is finalized as seen on the back table.
I did not hear that it was approved. It might be finalized. I haven't heard that it is approved.
And the other thing is the wiring is already in the ground, so that where the wiring is will be a light or no light at all.
What I was last told by that is that there are breakers or barriers.
There are breakout points.
Breakers.
Yeah.
That I believe PG&E put in.
Throw out the idea of adopting a light the same way that people are asked to adopt portions of a freeway, and that we try a plan where we find out if the business owners would like to adopt a light. And I'm not suggesting we plaster their business cards all over the lamps, but in some unobtrusive way, put the business name on the lamp, perhaps in a small brass plaque. But, they won't go for it. I don't think the people will. And that really expounds on Mr. Ballou's idea that we'd like to get the business people to pay for it if possible, rather than the general public. Thank you.
Thank you, Roland. Thank you. That closes the public comment, and then we'll bring this back to the board. We have a motion and second. I think I could support this motion if there was instructions to staff regarding funding, which this doesn't have at the moment.
Well, let's add that. I would certainly appreciate that. Oh, sorry.
I would, as the maker of the motion, accept that addition to the motion.
Mr. President, speaking to the motion, I can only support it if we get the information first, and I see no harm in postponing this item for 1 month.
Let's check with Mr. Lopes on that subject. Just on that.
Thank you. I think that, as you can tell, we're a little pressed for time. We need to start construction drawings and work with the North Coast Advisory Council to show them a final design from those construction drawings. And I'm not sure we can come back as soon as the NCAC April meeting. With that, I don't know if we can come back to you with any new, again, final construction drawings that the NCAC would have seen. But we were willing to try. It won't be impossible to wait a month, but we will probably go ahead with our commitment through the grant to start the construction design process so we can come back and show the community how this adjusted lighting plan would look with fewer lights. And we, in that process, will be glad to work with individuals on the lighting type. I know you're mostly concerned about funding options, and we can perhaps provide some resources there, too, if you want to continue this. But we, of course, would appreciate a decision earlier than later at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Sounds from the testimony that while difficult, it's doable if this is continued for a month. And I think we'd have a tremendous amount of information that we don't have now that would be helpful in making the final decision.
Plus, this is, I think this would be notice to the merchants, you know, to and let me make my position clear. If the merchants support this and are willing to step up to the plate and provide the funding, I would absolutely support this because I think it's in the downtown area. My parents were merchants. I believe in merchants. My wife.
There has been ample opportunity for people to come and voice their opinion. Ann has been very good about staying there till all hours. As a matter of fact, I'll tell the anecdote. The other night, it came up when the power went out, or no, the timer went off at the bank. And so Chief Putney drove the fire truck up and shined the light in the windows so they can continue their meeting. So they've been pursuing this endeavor, and many, many, many people have spoken to it, and the opportunity to voice your opinion has been there. I just think we ought to note that.
I would be in favor of delay if it doesn't derail anything. I mean, that's the key thing. As a matter of fact, most of the delays, this is, how many years has it been going on? Yeah. It's almost as old as I am. Yeah. But the fact is, I grew old here, but the delays in the past has largely been either delays that we had no control over whatsoever. In my recollection, early on, there was changes in designs and all the rest of that. In fact, we've got the report on the fate of the crosstown trail portion of it. It's not finished yet. We've got a lot of unfinished projects. You know, they've been on the board, and they're going by fits and starts. I wouldn't, if it really endangered the proposal, you know, I'd be reluctant to delay it any further. I mean, all these delays. But if the delays will push it forward, at least in the minds of the reluctant board members. They can be sold on it, then I would be willing to defer to them. Otherwise, I'd be voting on it right now in favor of it, so it doesn't die. And my last comment has to do with the business district and businessmen. You know, I want to refer to my past experiences in business districts, and because it was a larger city, it was much less coherent getting people together. Even if the lights are not on during the business time, there's a lot of lighting already there, particularly on Burton Drive, just from the lights of the businesses themselves. But be that as it may, having a very attractive appearance to the entire area of the business area, including that long gap, which is now not developed but is obviously going to be developed at the Rod and Reel property. But it's an enhancement of the vision of the community as a whole. It's a statement, and it also invites people, some of them from the motels, go downtown instead of driving down there and going to a restaurant. They'll be able to stroll down there. It'd be very inviting.
Just to withdraw my motion, I guess, is the word. But again, I'd like to add that to some of the things Don's saying. There are people that, when those businesses close, there are employees that go out after all the business lights are turned off. They work and they go home. The public safety does not just extend to those people who stroll during the business hours. They're people coming out of work, and it's not safe for them. We've heard, when I've talked to the sheriff and other times, people who leave Camozzi's after hours who are maybe have had more to drink than they should, they have difficulties getting around in the dark. At any rate, we need the lighting there, and I think that the sooner we get it done, the better. But if to make it so the board is more in unison on this thinking, I would say let's wait until next month.
Yes, I had seconded it, so I'll go along with the second agrees.
With instructions to the staff to bring back some alternative sources of funding. Right.
Do we need to make a motion for that?
I think we should make something clear. We're really not trying to make decisions about the lamps, where they are, what they're like. Strictly the funding and right. Funding sources.
Yeah.
I think just enough people have had inputs on what kind of lamps they like and don't like. It's one of those subjects that goes on and on. I've been aware of them for years.
And they should provide their feedback and input to the North Coast Advisory Council and Ann Wyatt.
And I do believe the sightings are fixed. You may not have a lamp, or you have a lamp, but you can't say, I want it in between the two lamps. There's no, it's not going to happen. I think if the staff will come back with recommendations for funding, which the board is happy with, we'll be happy to do something. Thank you very much.
Do you want to move to continue the item to the next agenda?
I'll move to continue the item to the next agenda, to the next meeting. I don't know. I guess I want to say that if they, whatever they come up with for the funding, say they say, yes, let's form a lighting district, is that won't happen very quickly.
Yeah.
So are we then going to say, well, we're not going to approve this till we are sure we have funding? Other than the general fund?
There's no question that we're not going to be able to have any funding mechanism in place prior to the grant expiring. So the only thing before you next month will be options we could pursue in the future.
That's all I need.
Me too.
We'll have to get out and lobby.
So we'll continue this to next month.
It just wasn't seconded or actually
okay.
taken.
I seconded. So.
Seconded, okay.
I don't know how many times I've seconded.
Thank you. Well, I would appreciate the fact that as a board we can at least discuss this and flesh things out, or flesh it out, I should say.
Sure.
Thank you.
It's very enlightening.
Well.
Peter, you're beaming.
I looked at Brian. I said, that's his problem.
You guys didn't vote, Peter.
No. Pardon?
You made the motion and you seconded it, but there needs to be a vote.
Okay. Well, those in favor continuing to next month?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. That's unanimous. All right. We move to item D, which is the director's bylaws. About the per diems and so on, it's in 8.4b. Could we reference the resolution there? Does that make sense? Or because it doesn't tell you where to go to look for it. It says the per diem shall be set by resolution of the board. You see that?
I'm not sure. What are you asking?
Well, it says that it's talking about travel and so on. It says about reimbursement and so on. And it says the per diem shall be set by resolution of the board.
Yeah, I know it says it.
But it doesn't tell you where to go to look for it.
Well, that's part of the mystery of life.
Well, that might be true.
I would suggest that we keep it the same because the resolution may change during the year because we're looking at it for budget purposes and also for conformance with SB 135.
Okay. I had a, did I have a first and second for that?
Yes.
All right. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
And just so you know, President Chaldicott, it is contained within our travel policy, the per diem. So that's another source for you to go to that spells it out.
Thank you. We now move on to the item E, and I have a number of people who want to speak about it, but first of all, we'll have our report.
Thank you. You have before you an ordinance that was requested a few meetings ago that would, if adopted, allow the transfer of existing commercial EDUs to other commercial sites. While drafting this, I placed in the beginning of the ordinance a number of factual statements, hopefully they're factual, that I normally don't place in an ordinance because it's important, I believe, in this particular one to identify why it's even being considered by the board today. And that is that there, since the moratorium, no additional commercial EDUs available. And commercial EDUs are different than residential EDUs in application because all you need is a residential intent to serve letter and you can build the size residence and add on to it and add guest houses and so forth. But the moratorium on commercial EDUs forbade a lot of things happening in the commercial zone, and that may even be some of the reasons why there's 17 vacant buildings as reported earlier in this meeting. You can't even add a chair onto a restaurant currently under the moratorium because you can't get additional EDUs. Businesses can't change from one type of business to another without sometimes a reallocation or additional EDUs. This also wasn't a problem before the moratorium because normally you could get on the list and get what you needed in a fairly short number of months or years, and you could do process your development application with the county thereafter. This also provided an opportunity for funding for the lot reduction program, the build-out reduction program, because transfers aren't required in our ordinance. We don't have to allow them. So because of that authority, we can condition by ordinance those transfers by exacting something, and that's what this ordinance contains. And essentially what it does is, and some time ago there was an ordinance that stopped the sale and transfer of the residential EDUs from the commercial downtown area, pretty much. So I had added in a feature here, hopefully, that would stop some owner of these allocations from transferring all their commercial EDUs, leaving a residential that they could sell in the open market, thus creating another residential user out in the residential area. And if you have any questions or concerns regarding this ordinance, we're currently in the new procedure this year that requires that the district board introduce an ordinance today, and they can amend it at that introduction. It will be considered for adoption at the next meeting and be effective 30 days thereafter.
Thank you. Questions for council?
Mr. President, yeah. Just a rather pedestrian matter. in Section 1 of the ordinance, which refers to Subdivision F of Section 8.04.100 of the Cambria Code. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down, I think there's a typographical error. The word exiting, I think, should be existing.
Okay, thank you.
What does that mean in terms of Mr. Montan? Does he draft this? How does he define existence if he used, is that like a Freudian thing?
He just needs to turn the spell check on in his computer.
I am known throughout the district for doing this.
Actually, spell check wouldn't pick that up. Yeah.
I have a suggestion. It would appear that with commercial, we may in fact be transferring portions of an EDU, you know, less than one. I was wondering if we could add a sentence and listen to this. No transfer that nets the district or its designee less than a quarter of an EDU will be allowed under this ordinance.
That's perfectly appropriate for the ordinance if the boards would like to add that.
Why do you feel that's helpful?
They can start cutting it up like a restaurant pie, you know, where a guy wants to transfer an eighth from this transaction with an eighth from another to get a quarter, and then sort of running around a district picking these things up.
And that's a very good opportunity for an example. In a mixed-use issue, that's when it's probably going to come up, when there's an apartment above and maybe a business down in one of the villages and they have a 1.43 EDU. We all know that have been here long enough and figured out this EDU system, which is equivalent dwelling unit, that typically a residential has one EDU. And then if you see that it's broken up by 0.43, 0.7, 0.6, that there's usually a commercial facility there. What Peter is suggesting is that if you put a minimum on there, it doesn't totally absolve the site from ever having any water. If not, then it can be finagled in a way that the most minimum amount of water would be left on the site, maybe to serve a residence, an apartment, so to speak, or an affordable apartment type that's above. So maybe there does need to be some minimum for consideration left on the site. Remember, even in a mixed-use situation, it could fall below an EDU.
Shouldn't people...
So, you know, if, for example, in a case where there's as Peter said, a limit, but if it's in a special case, they could come in and, I mean, we're not that hard-nosed... They appeal to the general manager. That would be just a route. But you don't want to open, open it up.
Yeah, but if the resolution is flat out barring it, the appeal is going to be denied. I mean, mm-hmm. If I read the law and the law says it won't be considered flat out without mm-hmm. some saving language in there, either with staff or with us, then the appeal is worthless. There's got to be some... elasticity, some opening.
What I added in, which I didn't mention in my staff report, as a feature of this ordinance is that the general manager will determine in accordance with district laws, rules, and policies. And obviously a law would have to be legislated by this board and possibly rule making also. But the general manager can establish policies and how this is administered. And I did that because we really don't know all the circumstances we're going to be faced with, and we want to be consistent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Actually, mine was concerned with the actual moving off-site, you know, where they're not paring it down.
And I also placed in here that the general manager can determine what should remain on-site,
right,
because I didn't want everyone to sell their commercial EDUs and there'd be a vacant building there forever.
Yeah, that's what I was
saying. So they can make she can make a determination that based on historical uses or the size of the building or the zoning that a certain amount of commercial EDU should remain on the site.
Concern is satisfied because if the applicant is not happy with the discretion exercised by the general manager, that applicant can then come to us and then we can determine whether that's appropriate.
And the staff is being bombarded with a lot of different situations and needs some guidance. We can come back for some rulemaking and a policy to have the board direct us.
All right. You ready for the public comment now? All right. I have a number of public comments. If you come to the front so you're ready to speak, Betty Adams. No, Becky Adams, followed by Michael Lyons. Is Michael Lyons there? You ready?
Hi.
Thank you.
I'm Becky Adams. Thanks for letting me speak this afternoon. I'm a property owner here, but I'm also a realtor, and I'm an agent for commercial property owners as well as residential owners. I have a question. I'm wondering if a study's been conducted to determine how many commercial properties have water in excess of their current uses. If this hasn't been done, I would think that it's material to the practicality of the ordinance. I want to say that I think the district requirement for equal proportion of EDUs to be donated is not in the best interest of the community. The proposed ordinance is really a disincentive for owners of commercial water to sell their EDUs. Number two, it eliminates the sale of small portions of EDUs by an owner that does not have an excess to donate. And more importantly, it will affect the value of commercial EDUs. One of the major principles of the market value is supply and demand. Even if the CCSD withholds for sale the pool of EDUs that they are collecting, the knowledge that they are or will be at some point available could in effect flood the market, or it will definitely affect the value of the EDUs, and I would like you to consider that. I'm thinking that a fee in the form of a fee schedule will allow for a direct deposit into a lot retirement fund with a minimum of administrative costs. Number three, it will allow owners of less than one EDU to sell their water. Number four, it will eliminate the enormous disincentive for owners to sell their commercial water, as I mentioned before. And I think that a fee of under 10% of the gross sale will be consistent with the costs of the in-lieu lots being purchased for retirement in the residential sector. Thank you.
Do you have that in writing? You want to pass that to staff?
Would you like me to type it in a much better?
Well,
these
yeah,
are my notes today.
As a considered
I would
argument,
love to.
I think you should pass it to staff.
Thank you. I'll email it. Thank
you. And just don't use Mr. Montanan's spell checking.
Yeah, exactly.
May I send it to you, Art?
Yes, and we, as I stated earlier, we're going to consider this ordinance for adoption next month, and we can include your comments in the staff report.
Thank you very much.
And is a comment for staff? Oh,
okay. I think she raised a number of interesting concepts. Good alternatives.
Yes, sir.
My name is Mike Lyons, and if no one of the other public speakers addresses the question you just asked in their allotted time, I would like to come back to the issue of the number of minimum commercial EDUs left on vacant property. Now, with my statement, first let me say that I agree with the stated goal of the new ordinance, that is to move forward the build-out reduction program. I just disagree with the methods the CCSD is proposing to achieve this goal. When investigating buying the commercial property known as 1601 Main Street, I went to the CCSD offices to inquire about water rights and allocations. Joyce Hannum confirmed that the property has 13.65 commercial EDUs. In fact, I have a written statement issued by the CCSD to that effect. I was told that regardless of the future use of this property, the water allocation went with the property and could not be taken away. In fact, Joyce told me, quote, "We do not even have a mechanism to take water allocations away," end quote.
Excuse me, sir. Are you talking to this motion or to your own personal situation?
Both.
Because if you could select out your own personal situation, otherwise you'll use your 3 minutes up.
All right. I timed this, by the way, so that it was, I know it's under 3 minutes without interruption. I was also told that because of the actual water use of this property that did not equal the allocation for it, the allocation was still in place and could not be altered. As long as I satisfied the County Planning Department and the Coastal Commission, I had a right to use that water any way I saw fit. I bought that property in a contiguous vacant parcel and combined them into one legal APN. Under this new proposal, if I'm forced to give away an equal number of EDUs that I sell, you have effectively confiscated 50% of my property, the same property that I was told could not be taken away by the CCSD. The CCSD is a services district. You are elected and paid to serve water, sewer, trash, and other services to the residents of this town. You are rightly allowed to fund your activities by charging fees for delivery of these services, water hookup, sewer hookup, and fees for transfer of residential meters, for example. I do not think your mandate includes becoming an owner or seller of property for the benefit of the CCSD. It is entirely wrong for you to confiscate my property subject. If you let this program be put into place and if competition is so unfair and I cannot sell my water rights for a profit, then I won't do it. And you won't get my free EDUs, and this artificially engineered program will not yield any results.
Thank you.
Mr. President, I have a question of Mr. Lyons.
Yes.
I think I was favorably impressed with the comments that Becky Adams made. She brought a lot of interesting concepts to the meeting here and shared them with us. Would you support some or all of the concepts that she discussed with us?
Yes, I think I would. Her comments and her suggestions seemed entirely fair, and you'll notice that I didn't offer any mechanism for you to achieve your goal here.
Right.
I'm just asking for a fair resolution of the matter.
Right.
Will you pass your comments to staff so they can review them?
Sure. Yes, Do you want me to address the second question at this time or later? Or maybe someone else will?
What was the second question?
About transferring all of the commercial water rights off of a certain piece of property.
Oh, I see. Yes,
it's an issue. I think we need to hear what they
have. I'd be very brief. I don't have a written statement.
You have very considered arguments. I think we should hear them, yes.
Yes, well, I don't understand the premise at all of not of trying to regulate how many commercial EDUs are left on a certain property. It shouldn't be up to the district to determine whether a commercial property has water rights on it or not. The market will determine that. For example, if there is an owner, maybe he inherited the property, of a certain property on Main Street that is a very difficult build, but the primary value of that property is in the water rights, he should be allowed to sell that off entirely. If you're concerned that property would never, ever be developed, maybe a more creative individual would come along eventually and want to build on that property and come back to the CCSD for commercial water and or go to the open market system you establish here and buy that water and bring it back to the property. I don't understand why the fact that a property has no commercial water rights attached to it at any given moment is of any real concern to the CCSD.
Mr. President, perhaps this is apples and oranges, but I think the concern is a little bit different than the way you expressed it. There are quite a number of commercial properties in Cambria that have a residential EDU coupled with a commercial EDU. The delivery of water to those properties is done as if it's an entirely a commercial entity, and we apply the commercial water rates to those properties. I think the concern is that if all of the commercial is stripped off of the property, leaving only a residential EDU, then it will hinder us, it will hamper us in terms of achieving build-out reduction at 4,650 units, because the possibility would exist of having a number of residential units, although charged with commercial rates, in Cambria.
I think they're two different subjects. I agree with you, but
flexibility if that situation presents itself.
Yes, well, it would seem to me if that was written into the ordinance, it would eliminate that question.
Just want to be sure I'm understanding. No one would start this process except under their own volition. It would never start with the district, right? So no one would, we would never be taking any water away from a property unless the owner wanted to do something. Is that correct? I'm not sure that our last speaker was speaking in that context. It seems to me that it's only going to start if the owner wants to do something. Yeah.
That's correct, and the way I believe it will operate is that the sale of their EDU would be placed in escrow, and at that same time would be the transfer of the EDU to the district or designee, so it wouldn't compete head-to-head with them. Also, we would have to approve the build-out reduction program first before we would actually spend and sell the EDUs and spend the money to implement it. So there would be some delay there, too.
I have Richard Morse, followed by Richard Morriton.
Dick Morris, resident of Cambria. Two points. Three of the motions or resolutions that have been discussed today prior to this one, the board and the public have talked about communication, interaction, input, etc. I would urge you on this issue, since it's very contentious, new, for the first time discusses commercial water meters, to get the citizens involved. Don't just have a resolution put out to the public on a Monday and then have a meeting on a Wednesday like today, and then suddenly all of us have to absorb it, digest it. I don't know when you guys got it. But it's just too quick of a process, in my judgment. And more importantly, the public isn't involved. Could you not, for instance, establish a citizens' committee of not a large committee, no more than six people, perhaps people that are interested, involved in this, two commercial owners, two realtors, two people from the public, and get your input as Art is putting together the resolution, have him have the benefit of the public's input in what the resolution should be before it's presented, and then have this kind of a discussion. I would urge you to consider that. Secondly, I concur with the other speakers that I don't feel the CCSB should be in the real estate business. I don't see that as part of your charter, and I see it as detrimental to the whole process of you having an EDU to sell. That just doesn't seem right to me. More importantly, you're then competing with the public, your constituents, who are also trying to sell the same meters, and I think the value goes down. I think there are many other ways to get the monies instead of you selling an EDU by, as the other speakers have indicated, establishing fees for the process.
An ordinance with these points, and I'm obviously that doesn't always automatically go to every citizen and business owner in the district, but the new procedure does allow the additional 30 days and another hearing.
Come to the microphone, yes, sir.
Excuse me, Mr. Yes. President. Yes. May I make a comment
on
that?
Sir.
I'm just suggesting, Art, that the input to the actual resolution that's presented during these 30-day periods be participated in by the public, so that you're getting the input of the ultimate users of this, the benefactors of it, the public in the community, as you're writing the resolution for presentation, as opposed to doing it in whatever way you have been doing it. Thank you.
I do think this is the public participation, by the way. Yeah. Thank you. Richard Moore?
Moratine.
Thank you, sir.
I'm a resident of Cambria. Thank you, President Caldicott and members of the CCSD, for letting me speak. I just have a couple of comments regarding this commercial EDU transfer. In the agenda presented, CCSD stated that the district allocates 20% of its water services for commercial uses. It also states that you have a moratorium imposed at present. First of all, I'd like to know how far off are we from meeting this goal? Are we already maxed out at 20%? This is why the moratorium. Secondly, what happens if it's short of it when we meet this goal? Are you going to impose the moratorium again? I raise these questions because, first of all, I think it's fair to say that since these are existing units, they were already counted, so to speak, in the equation to determine water availability. That being said, it would be unfair, once the sale of existing commercial EDUs are started, that they should be halted because of a 20% limitation to future commercial ventures. I feel that the moratorium should have no bearing on the transferring on existing commercial EDUs. Secondly, under the present proposed ordinance, I think it's terribly unfair to the owners of the commercial EDUs. The fact is, everybody stands to benefit from the sale and transfer of the EDUs, and yet the ordinance only penalizes the seller. he has to give up a whole EDU. CCSD benefits, the buyer benefits, and the general public are all beneficiaries. But the ordinance only requires the seller to give up the EDU, and I think that's terribly unfair. A more equitable solution would be that the condition for transferring a commercial EDU is to retire a one residential lot regardless of price, which is in keeping with the CCSD's goal of retiring lots, but yet keeping the CCSD out of the business of price marketing properties. I believe that the EDUs are a viable commodity, no different than a business opportunity or selling a brand name that can be sold with no physical property exchanging hands. The CCSD has no right to take away what is legally the seller's, bought and paid for with no fair market.
Of water was reserved for commercial. That's just a statement of history.
Yes, but are we at that point today?
Well, it's history. We're not doing that today. We're not giving any water out today. But, I mean, if for example, if water was available today, for example, a desal plant came online, then, yes, 20% would go commercial, 80% would go to...
But what this whole process is stating to the board is there are existing water rights that are not being utilized. My question I raised was, are we at that maximum 20% right now with existing rights?
Well, we don't know that. That's the point. Yeah.
The last analysis that was done indicated that we're providing more than 20% of our water to visitor-serving uses.
More than 20%?
Yeah.
It's a guideline from the Coastal Commission that
we
allocate, and it was kind of fuzzy, but it was either more than 20% or at least 20% for.
It's a minimum.
It's a minimum.
It was in the actually, I was on the Coastal Commission, and that's one of the requirements for visitor serving benefits. 20% of the water has got to be set aside as a minimum. And that's got to be a floating. I mean, as the community grows, they're going to have more water being serviced to service. And so the 20% is not a fixed unit. It depends upon how much total water that's being produced. And
right.
Sold.
My point earlier was these are already existing units. And so shouldn't have these already been used in the equation of water availability?
Well, they were. But what
whether happened, or not you determine it's 20% or more than 20%.
All that's really happened is, for example, a laundromat may now be an office, and therefore there's a surplus of water. That's the kind of situation we're looking at, really.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a question of the speaker.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President. I'm intrigued with your suggestion that the transfer of commercial EDUs be made roughly equivalent to the process and requirements we have for transferring a residential meter. That is, you have to retire a lot.
Yes.
When you transfer a residential meter. Would you also support the concept that Becky Adams brought to us that would require the payment of a fee or perhaps some percentage of the price that is that a EDU sells for when you
I
do
would.
The transaction?
Either a fee or a residential lot, but I believe the opportunity or choice should be given to the seller. And one of the beauty about just making it just a residential lot is, or charging a fee, in my opinion, is the fact that both the seller and the buyer can both negotiate and say, look, you can pay half of this fee and I'll pay half of this, and both people walk away satisfied, and it's not just the seller who gets penalized. Mm-hmm. Likewise, with the reduction of retirement of lot, yes, that is the stated CCSD goal, so I think they meet the requirements there. But I also think that it gives... The CCSD will participate in the process because they will not be getting the full amount fair market value of an EDU. That's where you participate in, and I think that's what the beauty is of either a fee, flat fee, so to speak, or charging. I'm requiring just a...
This whole EDU market, was this generated by our declaration of 350 water emergency? In other words, was there this kind of an EDU market prior to the enactment of the 350 water emergency?
Well, there never was a market because it wasn't ever allowed for commercial EDUs. But we received requests to allow the transfers, and I think they were driven by the fact that the moratorium didn't allow commercial to receive any more allocations on the yearly allocation.
So the point is the market for these commercial EDUs grew after the enactment of the Water Code Section 350.
That's
the problem with all with your premises here. On the one hand, we're the bad guys because how dare we get involved in this market? We should leave it to the open market. On the other hand, were it not for our concern for water and the community, this market never would have been generated.
I agree with that, sir, but I think in every other commodity, where is the requirement that if I had two houses, I got to sell one, I got to give away my other house? That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I would suggest that, we could debate the issue of who created the market and why these commercial allocations are valuable. But the bottom line is, I think the district and thereby the residents of Cambria, the ratepayers in Cambria, are presented with an opportunity. The opportunity exists to help fund the lot retirement program, which is going to be an expensive proposition by any yardstick. And all we have to do is figure out an equitable way to allow the market to occur, an equitable way to free up the commercial EDUs so that at least to some degree the free market can take over, these EDUs can be transferred, and the residents of Cambria can benefit from that. The concept is good. I think, as with all things, the devil is in the details, and it's just a matter of working out the details in terms of how we benefit from this so that we can pass that benefit on to the residents and ratepayers in Cambria.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Could I say that I thank all the speakers today. They've all brought very reasoned arguments, and we appreciate that.
I think so.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it seems like we've gotten a lot of new ideas from this, so I'm assuming or make the suggestion that we ask District Council to redraft it, integrating some of these new other thoughts. Is that?
It's difficult to do because I haven't gotten majority direction from the board on which ones to include and not include. Nice.
May I put a suggestion on the table in terms of just a process? The idea was broached that perhaps a citizens committee could be created and so on. We have quite a few citizens committees. Our staff is really overburdened. But I think a variation of that suggestion could be put in motion that would involve two board members perhaps constituting a committee, and the two board members can meet Whistle on the books and allow the marketplace to start generating revenue or lots or whatever for the district, the better off we're going to be.
Well, it seems to me that, yes, it benefits the build-out reduction, but it benefits the people who own excessive units as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not like we've put this idea forward only for that reason.
That's right.
It allows a mechanism for people who have more units than they need to benefit from them.
That's right. And in many respects, maybe it makes more sense to require the retirement of a lot or the payment of a fee or the payment of some percentage of the sales price of these EDUs and keep the district out of the marketplace so that, as was pointed out, we're not competing against those who are selling, thereby driving down the price of these EDUs.
Yeah,
it's not going to drive it up. Competition always drives prices
down. Who's pulling whose strings here?
I
mean,
I think it is a mutual benefit thing. And yes, if you're willing to be on that committee and to invite a couple of these people who have presented ideas to meet with you for a couple times, and also Art, I assume, would join that group.
Art had something to say.
If the board wants me there, I certainly will be there. you can do one of two things. You can just continue what we have here today to the next board meeting, and the committee can come back with a redraft of an ordinance to introduce. Or you can introduce this ordinance and then consider the committee's recommendation at the next board meeting, and if you choose to amend the ordinance, then it can be reintroduced. I suggest you introduce this, then the public will know what's on the table somewhat in advance, and then the committee can suggest something different.
Art, you're good. You are good.
I think that's a good way to go. My particular problem, Mr. President, is I'm going to be out of the country from April the 11th to April the 25th.
You were.
No, I am.
Your visa has been canceled.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk in terms of the time. You mentioned the fact we wanted to get this on the road. Would a two-month delay while this is dealt with be a problem?
It's not for me.
Months. Yeah. Because Greg is so into this issue with just oozing out of his body. I mean, I know he
gets
loves
my,
this
gets
issue.
My juices flowing.
This is his issue. So.
Yeah. And remember, the Build-Out Reduction Committee will come back with their report, but they also want to hold a town hall meeting in May. So they've got some communication efforts they want to make even post your board meeting.
It seems that there's a number of people in town that are sort of half-informed or fully informed, but we need them all to be fully informed. Right. That's the most important part.
So we put this off till May. We won't consider it again until...
Well, I suggest you introduce it and then continue the adoption or direct the adoption be placed on the agenda in 2 months.
So moved.
All right. Second. Adjourn to closed session. Yeah.